It's 46. Okay, if I have a little bit of quiet, we're ready to start our September 1st, 2016 meeting. The City of Morro Bay Harbor Advisory Board, September 1st. We have all present except for Gene. He is an excused absence. Is that correct, Eric?
Correct.
And everyone else is here, so we do have a quorum. So I'd like to have a moment of silence. Joe, welcome back. Why don't you, we'll bow our heads, and if you could say the Pledge of Allegiance in a minute. Okay.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you. So this is the time that we have announcements and presentations by members of the board here. Ron, do you have anything to share with us at this point in time?
It's not directly related to the harbor, but the Community Foundation of Estero Bay, which is a 24-year-old philanthropic operation that focuses on putting kids into organized sports that otherwise couldn't afford to do it, is having its premier fundraising event October 29 at Morro Bay Sings. It's an annual event. This year it's Morro Bay Sings Billy Joel. Tickets are available, and there will be great food from the galley and a silent and live auction, and a good time will be had by all. Don't leave your money at home.
Thank you, Ron. Dana?
Yeah, before you go out on the 29th to Morro Bay Sings, especially if you have a boat, or if you know anybody has a boat, or a kayak, or a paddleboard, or anything, we're organizing a sail-out welcoming flotilla. Cue the San Salvador photo, please. Hello? There we go. Yes, when the San Salvador comes in for its 10-day visit to Morro Bay, coming in on the 29th, late morning. It was going to be in the afternoon, but we're looking at high tide about 10:40, and they're going to be coming in. We'd like to get as many boats from the whole boating community, whether it's commercial fishermen or recreational boats or, like I said, kayaks, paddle boards. We're going to have the Salinian tribe has made some Thule canoes, and they're going to be out there too, inside the bay. But if you have a bigger boat, go on outside and greet them before they come in. So that is on the 29th of September. Yes.
Now, where do we start, Dana?
Where do you start?
Yeah.
Well, it's not necessarily a parade. It's just a gathering. Go out and, you know, don't get in their way, but be nearby. I don't know if you've ever seen this happen before, but huge regattas or like the Volvo Ocean Race or anything like that, when they come in, there's just a mob of boats. Or a lot of times when there's tall ships coming into harbors, visiting, you'll see the same thing.
Okay.
So we're going to try and do that just to give them a Morro Bay greeting.
Good things. Lynn, question?
As you well know, when you're out on the water.
I do, but we need something a little more definite.
Well, if I had something more definite, I would certainly give it to you, because I just found out yesterday that it was not going to be in the afternoon.
Okay.
And that could always change. But you can get a hold of me. I'm going to be contacting people and be on the radio. We're going to have, there's going to be a helicopter doing aerial photos of this. there's going to probably somebody will have a drone, but there is going to be a media boat outside and one inside taking photos. So it should be a big deal.
So I should leave the dock about 10 o'clock.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Or you could go out even earlier and greet them at sunrise, you know, and sail along with them.
I could.
Do some circles around them.
I could.
They are coming from Monterey. Thank you, Terry.
Thank you, Dana. Neil?
None at the time.
I have a couple things here. The first thing is the Harbor Festival, as you all know, is October 1st. And we're going to reenact the Jesse King Memorial Paddle Race, the Cayucas Pier to Coleman Beach in Morro Bay. This race consists of a six-mile course, as I say, from Cayucas Pier to the Coleman Beach in Morro Bay. And the friends and family of Jesse King held the inaugural Jesse King Memorial Paddle Race on October 31st, 2009. And this event was sponsored by many local Central Coast merchants and organizations, as well as Jesse's friends and family. Jesse King is a former U.S. Coast Guard, Honor Guard, and Machinery Technician, Third Class, stationed in Morro Bay, and a City of Morro Bay lifeguard. And he passed away in a free diving accident off the coast of Cambria on July 1st, 2009. This is being shepherded by Ken Twist of the Paddleboard Company. If you would like to enter the race or donate any money, just go to the Friends of the Morro Bay Harbor Department.org website. You can sign up there. So we'll be reinitiating this race October 1st. Also, on November 5th, we have our second annual drive-in movie at The Rock, sponsored by Surfline and the Friends of the Morro Bay Harbor Department. And we are showing two movies, Vertical Lines and Strange Rumblings in Shangri-La. Come and see a drive-in movie experience November 5th at 7 p.m. More information, go to our website. Thank you. Lynn?
Just would like to mention that the Morro Bay Yacht Club summer sailing lessons are over for the summer. We had a really good turnout this year. I think every class was filled up to 10 or 12 students in the classes, and they really enjoyed it, and it will be on again next year, so watch the website if you're interested in learning to sail.
Thank you, Lynn. Joe?
Well, I don't know if any of you noticed the big boats that have been coming in lately. We have a pink shrimp fishery going on off of our coast right now. It's the first time pink shrimp have been landed in the Morro Bay in approximately 15 years, so that's pretty cool. The squid has kind of died out a bit. Guys have moved up north. Still really early in the season, so we'll see if we can get them back down here. You brought up the Harbor Festival. I'll just say the Fishermen's Organization, we will be having our barbecue down there, selling barbecue to Albacore. And then one other thing that has been going on is, I don't know if you guys knew that the president has kind of proposed marine monuments all over the West Coast here. And it was a couple weeks ago now, but the U.S. House of Representatives came out and made a strong statement against marine monuments, which is cool for the fishing. If it went through with the way that it was currently structured or proposed to be structured, it would have been pretty devastating to the West Coast fleet. So we'll see how that goes here in the near future. Hopefully hopefully we don't get shut down with that. So that's all I got there.
Hey, Joe, how long is squid season? Is there a limit on squid season, or is there any regulations on that?
I'm not 100% sure. I've never participated in the squid fishery. I believe that it's a lot like the sardine fishery or the anchovy fishery as far as seining goes, where there is an overall catch limit, so many metric tons for the fleet, and once that's reached, it's shut down, but don't quote me on that because I'm not 100% sure.
Okay. Do you know, Eric?
Yeah, that's correct. It's sort of a derby style. There's a tonnage that the whole fleet goes after, and when it's caught, and they shut them down.
Okay. All right, thank you.
That's a good guess.
Oh, okay. And this is now a time for public comment period. Anyone in the audience would like to come up and address the board on any city issues that we won't be addressing tonight. Seeing two people in the audience, I think both of them are here for one of our agenda items. So we will move to look at the consent calendar, A1. So has everyone had a chance to look at the minutes from the Harvard Advisory Board meeting held on August 4th? I hear a motion.
I would move to accept the minutes of the August 4th, 2016 meeting.
Dana approves the motion. Lynn?
Correction.
Okay.
A correction in the minutes that the galleon San Salvador will be coming to the South T Pier on September 28th rather than August 28th.
At that time, that's what the date was.
Ah.
It had been changed.
August 28th through October 9th?
No.
Is what the dates were?
No, I'm sorry. I thought you said the 28th, September 28th. I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. That should be corrected. It should be September 28th.
Good catch.
But, and it is now the 29th that they're coming in.
It's a moving target. But will you correct those minutes to reflect September instead of August? I believe that's what was said in our meeting.
Can I second that?
Should I?
I'd like to amend my motion.
Okay.
To observe the corrections of that date.
And then make a motion.
Yeah, my motion is to accept the minutes of the August 4th meeting with the corrections for the arrival of San Salvador.
Okay. I'll second that.
Yeah, I have a motion by Dana, a second by Neil. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes. Thank you. Okay, so the next item on our agenda is the Harvard Department status report. And this is Eric's time to shine.
I'm not sure about that.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So a fair amount of activity in the last month, as always. I'll try and be as brief as possible. Statistics over the last month since August 1st, when I wrote this staff report, I think on the 25th, we had 17 emergency responses, 89 calls for service, 56 assistance of other agencies, and 27 enforcement contacts. We had three shark sightings, confirmed shark sightings during that period. I think one was up in Cayucas and a couple in Morro Bay. That activity, knock on wood, seems to have subsided a bit, although we had another one was it early this week or late last week. So the sharks are still around. White sharks are still around. They're transitory. Hopefully they're moving on. And Neil, you've got something?
Did you say one inside of Morro Bay?
No.
Okay.
One in Cayucas, a couple north of the rock, Morro Bay. Sorry, no, I didn't mean inside the bay. So that was it with the activity there. On August 1st, we have an interim police chief, Larry Todd, was sworn in by the mayor and city manager up at the community center. Since the writing of this staff report, we also have two new city employees. One is a new rec division manager, Kirk Carmichael. Kirk was with us. It's been 15 years now. He worked in the rec center, I think, as a sports supervisor. So Kirk's back running the rec division. And then I don't have the name because I just don't have it memorized yet, but we've got a new finance person hired in the finance department. So look for those people coming on here pretty soon. On August 1st, we were dispatched to report of boaters stranded on the beach near the South Jetty. It was a pretty heavy fog day, relatively small surf. We immediately sent out Harbor Patrol vessels and a jet ski out to the scene, and Coast Guard responded shortly behind us. We sent a jet ski on into the beach, and they discovered a small aluminum boat, about a 16-foot aluminum boat, on the beach, on the sand, with four occupants, all of them safely alive and unhurt. We swam a lifeguard in to assess the situation a little further. Got a couple more personnel on scene and walked them on down the sand spit to be pulled out on the end of the sand spit. Got another patrol boat, swam in a tow line and towed the boat off. Turns out they were navigating back with the time-tested method of 1 foot on the gunwale and 1 foot on the beach. They got inside the surf line. Fortunately, saw that going out probably wasn't a good decision, so they just turned in and elected to go to the beach and beach it, which was a great decision. I think most people probably in that situation panic and try to go back out through the surf, which can end in disaster, as you well know. We've had a number of incidents that have resulted in deaths. But these guys just went in, ran it into shallow water, kicked up the engine and stepped out and walked up onto the beach, and they were fine, which was great because one of the fellows was pretty elderly and pretty frail. It probably took them a good 45 minutes to walk from the south jetty to the tip of the sand spit to get off on our boat, and we had to help them up on the boat. So it's a good thing they made a great decision, and the boat came out unharmed. And even if the boat was a total loss, it doesn't matter. It's the life that matters. So great decision on their part, so interesting case there. Also on the first, we had two climbers up on top of the rock that got stuck. Coast Guard personnel initially spotted them with their binoculars, and then they disappeared along the backside. I think they saw all the lights and sirens show up at the base of the rock, so they scrambled over the backside to get out of view. We sent a patrol boat around, and about the time we spotted them, not far over the top of the crown, two Morro Bay Fire personnel coming up from the other side intercepted them and got them back down and where they were handed over to the State Parks and Police Department for potential prosecution for climbing the rock illegally. On the 22nd of August, we placed Tower Zero, a long-awaited Tower Zero placement. As you know, friends of the Harbor Department got that tower here for us with the transportation. Our lifeguard supervisor, Kyle Schaefer, spent a good month and a half, almost 2 months, refurbishing it, doing some glass work to it, and doing a great paint job to it. It's really for roughly maybe $4,000, $4,500. We've basically got a $40,000 lifeguard tower. If you go buy one of those off the shelf, that's what they're going to cost you. And so kudos to Kyle and his crew for putting all that process together. Public Works for helping us get it placed out there, to the friends again for even getting it here in the first place. So that tower will be up. We're debating whether we're leaving it up over the winter. You've probably seen in recent winters, we generally have lifeguards on duty through October Harbor Fest now. Harbor Fest weekend, we'll go to weekends only here pretty soon, and then weekends only till Harbor Fest weekend. But as you know, through the winter, we get a couple of weeks here and there of 80, 90-degree temperatures, which draws everybody out to the beach, and we'll typically send our lifeguards out that are still available by truck and stand by on the beach for those busy days. Now that we've got that tower there, we're kind of debating whether we want to leave it there or not. I've got some maintenance and vandalism concerns of it sitting out there all winter long, and but we'll see. But we've tested it out, and it's been up and running, so great vantage point. Wish it was fitting in a little better with the changing station there and that had all been designed cohesively, but that changing station was put in probably 25 years ago, so we'll be looking at the future next summer and seeing where we're going to leave it and go forward with that.
Now, Eric, we maybe tell the story of one of the things that new station will do for the safety, in the sense of, I think there was an incident where there was a lot of glare, because the two existing stations, you get that glare from the sun setting, and there was an incident that this new station is going to prevent.
Yeah, I mean, good point, Bill. So as you can imagine, if you're on a regular tower on the beach looking out through the surf, although the tower platform itself is probably up at 6 feet, maybe 7 feet, and then you standing on top of that, you've got a good 10-foot viewing parameters there, you're still looking a long way off into the surf, and the water is relatively flat, and people can disappear. People in trouble, especially if it's just a head above water, they can disappear pretty easily. And then you got the line of surf and white water in between. By having a tower parallel to the surf line rather than perpendicular, you're looking down into the surf line, which is a much better viewing location from a looking between the waves logistical standpoint, but also, as Bill says, in the afternoons, as you know, the sun sets in the west, and that glare coming off the ocean can be brutal, and you can lose sight of people pretty easily. So being off to the side there, you're not looking into the sun anymore. Even if you're looking sort of directly out where everybody's surfing, you'll still get some glare, but it won't be anything like what it is when you're on the beach. So that's going to be a great boon in our viewing and safety services, and should make it for safer lifeguard operations and better lifeguard operations. On the fishing front, I think, Joe, you pretty much covered most of it. Market squid's kind of come and gone. We'll see if the squid come back here. The pink shrimp's been great. We go down to, I think, most of our fish purveyors, and they've got those in the fish case. Albacore-wise, I don't know if Joe wants to build on this anymore, but some of our guys are already coming home. Unfortunately, it's been a pretty bad season. It sounds like it started off well early, but it was early in July when most of our guys aren't anticipating to be up there. So the people that were up there early got a good early season, and then it kind of got scratchy and shut down. So unfortunately, it has been a good season. Hopefully, they'll be able to make it up locally. I don't think anybody's really tried out here. I haven't heard of any sport boats going out, but we'll see what happens. Joe, you got anything to add to that?
I'm not sure about sport boats, but I know that there has been a couple of commercial boats that checked around out here. I know Steve on the DJ, he was, you know, left San Diego running up to Oregon. He checked around out here for a little bit, and there was a couple other boats that have been, you know, kind of making that transit that looked out here and didn't find very much. And when I say didn't find very much, like they didn't find anything. So, yeah, the season actually, or the albacore showed up in Oregon really, really early. There was guys that were absolutely killing them in the beginning of May, which is completely unheard of. It was kind of a trip. Guys having 300 to 500 fish scores a day in the beginning of May. So yeah, it seems like it started early and stopped early. Did the same thing last year. We come September last year, September 1st, it was shut. I mean, it was done. Everything was gone. We spent, I think, 21 days for 3.5 tons. So I forgot to bring that up. So thank you. Yeah, our albacore fleet will be home soon. Unless it could pick back up. But it sounds like they'll be home soon, so there'll be boats down here with albacore for sale off the boat as well, which will be kind of fun. That's always a good little time. Lots of good fish.
Now, are they home because the season's done, or there's no more albacore?
So albacore, tuna in general, there is no set season. It's pretty much when they show up and when they leave. So yeah, the fish have. It seems like they've left. Like I said, it's done this in years past too, though, where they're gone for 3 weeks. You don't catch anything for 3 weeks. Nobody really knows why, and then it turns back on and goes wide open. But judging off what happened last year, I don't know if that's going to happen. So it sounds like I've been in contact with a few of our guys, and it sounds like they're on their last little scratch here, trying to scrounge up the fish to come home with to sell off the dock, and they'll be on their way.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. So, and then with squid, you know, a couple little bumps of squid we had some interesting and some pretty good numbers of white sea bass showing up because sea bass follow the squid. I know a lot of the recreational boats are out there hitting them pretty hard for a few days, and some of the smaller commercial guys were getting some white sea bass too, so that was nice to have that. Recent council activity at August 9th meeting, the council considered a recommendation to staff to not pursue one of the management partner recommendations. Look at potentially contracting out police services to the Sheriff's Department. That was one of the management partner recommendations from the management partner studies over the last 5-6 years. And with that recommendation, they also recommended not look at potentially contracting out fire department to Cal Fire and us to a as yet unknown or undetermined Harbor Patrol consulting company. So they took all three of those off the table for at least 5 years, maybe 10 or more, and council approved that. And so at least for the time being, those are off the table. At their August 23rd meeting, council proclaimed the month of October and every month of October as Maritime Discovery Month, urging the citizens of Morro Bay to join the efforts to celebrate maritime heritage. As we know, the San Salvador will be here just in time for that, so the timing is good, and hopefully the San Salvador will be able to come here every October. And that will probably tie in pretty well with our Harbor Festival as years go by, if Maritime Discovery Month. So I urge folks to get out there and discover your maritime heritage. Also at the 25th meeting of August, Council adopted resolutions authorizing our department to enter into two more grants with the Department of Boating and Waterways. I'll thank Lori Stilts here to my left for acquiring those. One is a SAVE grant, which is Surrender, what is the acronym? What's the SAVE acronym stand for?
Surrender and Abandoned Vessel
Exchange. Yeah, Surrender and Abandoned Vessel Exchange. Thank you. I'm so used to VTIP and AWAF that saves a relatively new one. So it's basically our bend and vessel grant line. So we got $13,400 for those vessels. We got a little bit of money left from last year, so I'll make the announcement while I've got the public here. If you've got any old derelict, junky boats of any size, shape or color, sail or power, potential, we can take them off your hands. If they've been sitting in your backyard, side yard, a slip, whatever, and you just don't know what to do with it because you don't know how to pay for it or whatnot, come to the harbor department. We've got a potential option for you to take care of that boat as long as you're the registered owner and you can give us clean title to it. Potential, we can take that off your hands. The other grant we got was a boating safety and enforcement grant for the purchase of a little over $18,000 worth of FLIR thermal imaging equipment. And we're going to have, I think, some fixed equipment on one of our vessels and then some portable equipment as well. So FLIR, if you don't know, it's infrared imaging equipment that's able to see, not just at night, even in the daytime. It's amazing. Dana Stein, one of my patrol officers, and I, on a, I think it was a road trip when we were building our new patrol boat, 6-4, we stopped through the FLIR corporate headquarters down in Goleta, which is where all this equipment is built, and they did a demo of their stuff on their demo boat, and it's pretty interesting. You can see people walking around and see the thermal images in the middle of the day, so it's great equipment, so we'll be able to take advantage of that. And also at the August 25th meeting, staff presented an update of past and current council adopted goals. It was just an informational item. Every department did a quick two-minute roundabout of what they've done for the last year's goals and what got completed and what we're working on now. Past events, back on the 20th, we had the 8th Annual Zongo Yachting Club Cup. That's a sort of all boats, assorted, miscellaneous, and strange craft of all sorts event from Morro Bay down to Port San Luis. It's sort of billed as the biggest ocean race cruise from Morro Bay to Avila. We assisted with getting a few boats out of the harbor and out into some, hopefully, wind. Out a little further, but apparently several folks turned around and come back because there really wasn't any wind, and those that relied completely on wind couldn't get there. So a number of boats got down, no problem. Power boats, a lot of paddle craft, so that cup went pretty well from what I understand. Upcoming September 10th, the Avocado Margarita Festival at 700 Embarcadero. That's our parking lot down across from Rose's Landing Libertine Pub. That'll be taking place. You can go online at avomargfest.com for more information. October 3rd to 5th, we're hosting the 2016 Outdoor Writers Association of California Fall Conference. I guess it's a pretty big deal. The Outdoor Writers, there's both a California version of those folks and a national version. It's the California folks that are coming here in early October. They'll be right around just after Harbor Fest time. About 60 writers from all over the nation in California representing all sorts of outdoor activities and magazines and publications are here to just be shown around and look at all the opportunities, and then they go back into their hotel rooms and write stuff up, and hopefully more we get some good write-ups out of that. October 1 to December 3rd is the Surfboard Art Festival in Morro Bay. I don't know which annual festival it is. I think we're up to maybe 3 or 4 years now. That's a festival where local artists put their artwork on surfboards of various shapes and sizes, all sorts of different art from painting to sculpturing to just you name it, goes on surfboards. It's listed online on the website, mbsurfboardartfest.com, and folks can go around during that month and view, a couple of months and view what people have to offer, and judging takes place. And great event, interesting stuff that people can put on a surfboard. And then we got Harbor Fest. Bill, you already mentioned that. So still, we're a one-day event, free, open to anybody and everybody along the main core of the Embarcadero where our main waterfront leaseholders are. Like last year, from roughly the Anderson Inn to Gray's Inn, I think is about where it went to. The street ends will have various activities going on. The Commercial Fishermen's Organization is coming back with their barbecue. Maritime Museum folks. Dana, you want to do a plug there? Looks like you're getting ready to say something.
No, go ahead. You were doing good. I was just going to say one other thing. Is there'll be a sailboat race. It's the only in-the-water event going on during Harbor Fest, the Harbor Cup. And that's on Saturday during the event.
Okay, thanks.
And I think that we'll have the touch tank for the kids.
Yep, our department's planning on doing a touch tank there.
Yeah, that's always a very popular event. Bring down your kids, your family. It's a family event. Fireworks also will be at 8 o'clock, I believe. Is that correct?
Fireworks are planned at 8 o'clock, roughly off of Anderson Inn, more or less, I think, where it was done last year. So another great year, hopefully, with that coming up, and that's soon. Danny already brought up September 29th, October 9th, San Salvador's coming, replica of Cabrillo's 1542 galleon of Discovery. Central Coast Maritime Museum Association is orchestrating and helping put that together, hosting it as a fundraiser. So go to the Maritime Museum's website, morrobaymaritime.org, for more information on that. Harbor Festival, already got to that, October 3rd to October 7th. We're hosting and facilitating boating and waterways, marine law enforcement, rescue watercraft training. That's DBW's jet ski class that they put on for agencies up and down the coast. You'll get everybody from lifeguards to harbor patrols to sheriffs to police departments that come in for that training. So we're helping them, not in October, but probably over the next 6 or 8 months. They're bringing several classes in, and as is K-38, to bring some more of our jet ski training classes in. So look for those folks. And a couple things not on the list, September 14th, we've got a meeting, what we're tongue-in-cheek calling Potty Talk, which is we're getting all of our leaseholders together that have the restroom requirement in their leases and getting them all in a room, hopefully together, and go over the issues and operation parameters, what our city's expectations are, what the problems are, and just have a good roundtable and try and get everybody on the same page and see if we can make it our restroom situation a little better on the waterfront. As you know, we've got a problem with our public restrooms and servicing. I think the servicing has been increased like fivefold to try and keep up with it. City facilities folks are doing a great job of trying to keep up, but they're also kind of analyzing over the next few months and trying to make an effort to see if and quantify whether that's enough and strategically if they need to look at different times to do it. So we're looking at our restrooms in a larger fashion to try and make it work better for everybody. And finally, I had the Corps of Engineers here today for their pre-construction meeting for their project that's coming up, as we know, coming up this fall or coming up this winter. They got about $4 million to dredge the remainder of the harbor that the Aquina didn't get. They're opening their bids. It's out to bid right now. They're opening their bids September 19th. They're hoping to issue their notice to proceed in late October, early November, at which point the contractor will have about 10 days to get mobilized in here and then a 90-day window to complete. So we're looking at somewhere through November, December, January, February, Corps being here and doing the dredging. Bill, I know what you're already going to ask. State Park Museum, our State Park Marina, we're still working with our consultant and trying to get testing. It's up to the regulatory agencies to see if they'll allow the testing of the 50-50 mix for us to be able to piggyback on with the Corps contract. So we're still working with our consultant to try and get that testing passed by the regulatory agencies, and if we do, then we start figuring out next steps and how to contract on with the Corps. Fortunately, the Corps project is a small business set-aside, so the larger companies like Manson that have the big equipment, which generally can be a little quicker because they're bigger equipment, they've made it a small business set-aside, so the little companies will be here, which really suits the State Park Marina dredging as well, be a company that already has that, so it won't be something they have to think about, likely wouldn't be something they'd have to think about bringing additional equipment down for our project. They're probably already going to have it. So that's about it on my update, unless you got any questions.
So clarification, so you went ahead with the testing on the figure of the $178,000, or?
We're moving forward with structuring that in such a way. Because the whole package, pretty big price tag to get that whole package. That's everything from dredge design, testing, and document, bid document putting together. We're trying to get it structured in such a way with the testing that between the consultant and us, we're sort of calling an off-ramp to where we're going to look at the most sensitive, most likely to fail testing and try and get that as front-loaded as possible in the project so that we can go by off-ramps, and if those testing fails, we get off the off-ramp and we're done. We just know we're not going to go any further. So not contracting for the whole amount right off the bat, trying to do it strategically so we don't spend a bunch of money for something that we can test earlier for and pass or fail. So that's why we're trying to do it.
Well, thank you.
We're trying to do it. Yeah. Anybody else?
Any questions for Eric whatsoever? Now, Eric, I heard a rumor through the grapevine here in the town that the USDA awarded a grant contract to the Central Coast Aquarium in Avila Beach for the new aquarium in Morro Bay. Is there validity to that rumor?
I know the Central Coast Aquarium had gone to the USDA several months ago for $10 to $15 million.
And they got it.
And
I heard.
In the last 4 to 5 months, reports we got back from the aquarium folks were very positive that USDA was had them on board and wanted to do the loan and was moving forward and things were going. Very recently, yes, I've heard that. I don't know if things have been signed and, you know, if the ink's dry on the paper, but from what I understand, USDA's moving forward with a $20 million loan for the Central Coast our Central Coast Aquarium folks to move forward.
That's great.
And that's slated to kind of make its way back to the city council towards the end of this year, so the timing's looking good. If they put that together, then I imagine they'll start in earnest with architecture and engineering and starting to put together a real robust proposal package to present to the city towards the end of the year.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Very exciting. I've looked forward to hearing about that, and thank you. Neil?
Eric, with the SAVE program and that grant, do you guys have any boats currently that are set to be demolished?
We don't have any that are just sitting. We've on last year's grant, or the current grant we're on, not the new one we're getting right now, we've got $1,100 or $1,200 left that we'd like to spend. We don't have anything just sitting in the yard or in the water ready to go, unless Lori kicks me from behind. I don't think we do. We've got a couple in lien sale process, but may or may not be in time for that to get done.
Okay.
I think that grant expires in October, and then we got the new one coming up with the new money. So
that's good.
Yeah.
Sorry to keep you asking questions. The grant that we talked about for the renovation of the boat launch facilities, the whole master plan, did that get approved? I know that we were following that. And where do we stand on that, Eric?
Yeah, it's a good – thanks for bringing that up. Good question. It did get into the governor's budget, signed budget, $250,000 out of $1.7 million, which is for design, engineering, all the upfront paperwork stuff. Unfortunately, it doesn't go so it gets in the budget. The way the process works, it gets in the governor's budget, and then as an individual project, it has to go to the Department of Boating and Waterways Commission for approval. It's not slated to go to the commission until the February meeting. So assume February they approve it.
Okay.
State's already working on next year's budget by that time. If it's approved, I would assume that they're not just going to throw that $250,000 away. They're going to allocate either phase two, or if that's the last phase, or maybe more phases, but then they'll allocate and put it into the budget for the next year, and then knock on wood, if things continue to go well and that budget gets approved, and then it has to go to the commission again after that. It'd be sometime in 2017, maybe early 2018 to get moving on that. So yeah, it's looking good, and we're looking, and I'll continue on while I'm at it. Been working with Becca, and she's been getting with the folks over in Public Works, the planning people and water quality people, and trying to look at one more maybe part-time or short-term fix for that fish cleaning station to make it better. We're still having some issues down there. It's gotten better for the birds. We've got it pretty bird-proof now. The problem it has now with birds is humans and their behavior. There's still people that either think it's good or fun or just don't care, and they're cleaning their fish and they throw them from the fish cleaning station and try and get them in. Part of it, I understand, is logistics of cleaning fish. If you're there by yourself and you flay out a fish or two and you've got to go put some fish in the dumpster, the second you go walk over the dumpster to go put your carcass in, the pelican or some other bird swoops down and grabs your fillet. So it's a tough situation, but the biggest problem we have now is humans not getting their carcasses in and them ending up on the top or on the sides. And then it's got a sealed dumpster there. The garbage company replaces about every other month. They keep a dumpster sealed up, but it's still – so it doesn't leak, but you still – just by the nature of everything going on there and wet boots and feet and boats, you get water down there and you get fish blood and scales and gurry. And so we've got this puddle that just because of the grading down there just won't quite drain anywhere. So we're trying to solve that one next. It's kind of a primordial soup that we're hoping no life springs from before we get rid of it. So we're looking at maybe trying to move the dumpster over onto the pad where the fish cleaning station is and make a spot there where it can stay. Therefore, it won't get that drippy pile of soup underneath and make it one step better. And so.
Thank you, Eric. Okay. Hearing none, let's move on to our business items. And our first business item is C1, the update from the Marine Services Facility Boatyard Ad Hoc Committee on the committee's recent activities and consideration of proposal. I'd like to also recognize here in the audience Lexi. Your last name again?
Bell.
Lexi Bell from the NEP, who is also on that ad hoc committee. And then our participant, Terry Simmons, is also in the audience, and he will actually be making a presentation. But Ron, could you... I'm sorry, Dana, I apologize. Dana, you're as the chair. A little report, please, and what you want to do today.
Well, first, I think staff is going to start out with this report.
I was going to ask, you want me to queue up the staff report first and then do the report?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. So I'm going to fall on my sword and say Mr. Simons did send me an email earlier in August that I've somehow slipped through my email cracks, where he asked a few questions and sent me some information, and I apologize to him that I didn't get to that. I hope it didn't impede him getting to tonight and getting what you need to get done here. So I will say that may have thrown a slight monkey wrench into the works, but we'll see. So agenda item C1 is an update from the Boatyard Ad Hoc Committee on what's been happening since the August Harbor Advisory Board meeting. So at the August 8th meeting, you, the Harbor Advisory Board, received an update from the committee and as well from the development proposer, Terry Simons. They have voted to provide Mr. Simons a month to come back and present some financial analysis of the proposed facility with the hopes that that would help guide the and inform the process as it moves forward to see if it could help trigger some decision points. Alternatively, staff were still authorized by the City Council to commission a professional financial feasibility analysis as currently envisioned by the Harbor Advisory Board and Ad Hoc Committee. We put that on hold back in, it's been earlier this year,
March.
When Mr. Simons came forward, maybe springtime, with a proposal. So we're kind of waiting to see where we go with one of the two processes. Alternatively, in addition to those two options, which so sort of option A is Mr. Simons' proposal, B, pursuing financial feasibility independently of his proposal, and we've identified a new potential option for the Harbor Advisory Board to consider, and that's putting this whole process out to an RFQ, which is a request for qualifications, which is really a public works sort of oriented process where you put out an RFQ to the world and see if folks are interested in doing a given development, and when they come in and provide their curricula vitae or their sort of their modus operandi and what they can do, if you've got enough interest, then you can put it out to RFP. If you don't have interest, you can consider going to a sole source sort of process. So that's the third potential alternative that we've identified to potentially move forward with this process. And I think Gene brought that sort of idea up at the last Harbor Advisory Board meeting as well. So recommending and concluding in one here, we're recommending we listen to the obviously the ad hoc committee and Mr. Simons and what he's got for an update with one of possible three alternatives to move forward. Alternative one is continuing to work with Mr. Simons and vet his proposal, which eventually fairly soon I think is going to include development of an MOU, development MOU with the city to enable him to obtain some sort of entitlement to continue moving forward, justify moving forward. Option two, as I said, beginning the City Commission financial feasibility analysis, the results of which would be used to gauge future direction, if any. And then, as I just outlined, option number three is initiate an RFQ process, request for qualifications, and see what other sort of outside interest may be in there and move forward from that. So any recommendations made tonight be taken in advisement and assist us, city manager, city council, in determining what the city's next course of action may be, whether that's continuing on with Mr. Simons or bringing something to council or continuing on with the HAB or something in between. So with that, Dana, take it away.
Yes, the ad hoc has been discussing some of these alternatives, but I think we'd like to go ahead with Mr. Simons' presentation first, and then we'll go over the alternatives and speak to the HAB, considering that, and create some discussion.
Is that me? Eric, can you get my most recent
architectural work up on the screen?
Yeah, I think AGP's queuing it. Suffice it to say,
this has been a frustrating and slow month for me on trying to get personal traction on this. I have managed to spend a bunch more money on architectural services. Unfortunately, the one guy I was hoping to try to get some feedback from, which was Gene, who wanted to see a more maritime-oriented building, isn't here to give me that feedback. But hopefully the rest of you can look at the renderings my architect has come up with, and we can discuss that. I continue to believe that the project can be done feasibly, but a couple of the components, the museum, I've not had much luck on getting feedback from the museum group because they're all focused on the arrival of the ship and their big fundraiser, and so they've told me they want to wait until after Harborfest to move forward on that. I have done a preliminary timeline. I didn't bring it with me tonight. I didn't think it was appropriate yet, and I just got a draft standard lease form from the city today so that I can start marking that up to work towards the MOU that I want to present to city administration. So I'm spending money. I'm not making a lot of progress, but I am moving forward. This is a follow-up on the very, very primitive metal building drawings that you saw the last time. The thought was, and my hope is that people will see this as a more maritime facility, but I'm looking for feedback on that. Unfortunately, I was hoping Gene, who raised the issue, would give us some feedback. It's fundamentally the same building, but with some added features. The front entry element with its kind of lookout station element on the top of it serves a couple of functions, mostly just provide a strong visual focus to draw people down the Embarcadero into the building. And the museum is still intended to be on the ground floor with the mezzanine and the what we call the tall ship hall. What you see as a second floor balcony is actually an emergency escape route out of the exhibit facilities on the mezzanine of the exhibits for the Maritime Museum. And then on the what would be the westerly end of the building, which would be down and to the right, there's another stairway tower there. That is some space that we've found was surplus in the building, and we're just calling it Harbor Master's Office for lack of a better name at this point. The east end of the building still has the big boat barn door, and the back of the building, the north end of the building, which you see at the bottom, has a series of bays. The only, again, visual anomaly is that the architect put in a balcony across between the upper level and those construction bays. That'll be corrected in a future rendition of this if we go forward. Those are actually supposed to be mezzanines in the work bays for the contractors and the boatyard people that run that. And I guess mostly just looking to see if people have a warm and fuzzy feeling or if this is once again not maritime enough before we move much further forward. I'm hoping that we'll get some traction on developing a master lease for the property and an MOU so that I can actually start soliciting tenants, and that'll be the first real test of whether the feasibility of this project makes any sense. That and understanding the relationship with the Maritime Museum. They're trying to raise, I believe, around $50,000 as a part of this Harbor Fest visiting ship thing to fund their first effort. I hope that that goes very well for them because the space allocation that we're trying to create for them in this building, which is essentially the same amount of space that they had in the RRM plan, will require substantially more money from them to finish out. And since we're looking at them as being an anchor tenant in the building to draw other related marine-related businesses in, it's kind of critical that they be successful and move forward. The building is set up to be phased. If you look at the back of the building, what you see is a series of roll-up doors. That portion of the building, the ground floor restrooms, can be actually segregated out and built separately to service just the boat service yard in a subsequent phase to the boat storage yard. So the boat storage yard would come first. I've already got funding for that. I can do that out of pocket. But that would be kind of cherry-picking the whole project, and I'm really not interested in operating a boat storage yard per se, but it does provide a good opening entree to get the ball moving. The service provider that I've been speaking with wants to see a draft lease and the costs associated with that. I'm finally at a point now to where I think we're going to be able to move forward and see if we can get them enticed in, but I don't want to do that until I know that I have some sort of an exclusive relationship with the city, because they're big and I'm small. They'll just decide it's a good deal and they'll come in and take over the whole project. I'm being very candid with you on this. So that's where I'm at. And then the third floor is still envisioned to be offices, maritime-related and waterfront-related office uses. Building hasn't really changed much. It just has, hopefully, a more presentation-grade architectural theme to it. And like I say, I was hoping to get some feedback tonight from Gene and others as to whether this looks like something that you think is appropriate for Morro Bay. That's all I've got.
Okay, thank you. Dana?
Yeah, Terry, do you have any financial analysis material or any information?
Nothing that I'm ready to share at this point, because I haven't been able to get a hard number from the city in terms of what they're going to want to see. I just got a draft lease today. It's 19 or 20 pages long, and all of the significant parts, things like how much things would cost and what percentage of the various tenancies' revenue streams are in blank, and so I don't really have any way to analyze what our costs would be in terms of our responsibility to the city. The other thing that I haven't been able to find the right person to talk to about is the city's commitment towards the Maritime Museum, and if we can do a quid pro quo of providing them space in relationship to not paying a lease fee. I had the assistant city manager was supposed to be my contact person, and he's no longer with the city. So kind of was a rough month. I spent a lot of money but didn't get a lot of traction.
Okay. Does anybody else have questions for Mr. Simons?
How many square feet approximately is this graphic?
I'm sorry.
Square feet is this representation?
It used to be about 16 or 17,000 square feet. I think it's roughly about the same. It's a matter of how you calculate the mezzanine areas and stuff like that. But it's a big building.
What would you say that the approximate construction cost without regard to land preparation?
Well, if I don't land preparation or land acquisition?
Preparation. Just the building.
Just the building. Building sitting on a suitable site, and that's still to be determined, probably looking at about $110 a square foot without TIs.
So that, if I did the math correctly, that's less than $300,000?
$2.5 million.
Oh, sorry. There was a decimal point.
Yeah, it happens to me all the time.
That's good.
I've been staring at these numbers for a while.
I appreciate the help.
Overall, we're looking at about a $5 million project as we perceive it right now.
So approximately two and a half. I mean, just ballpark.
Yeah, and that's just the building. There's a lot of site work involved, particularly because of the use of the boat yard itself and the potential for toxic waste in the stormwater. The boat yard people that I'm working with in Ventura spent $1.5 million just on their clarifier for their boat yard stormwater before they could discharge it back into the ocean, and they're on the ocean frontage. So it can be a really hefty problem.
Well, with respect, that number has a lot to do with their acreage.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. No, that would be if we had to envision that level of stormwater management on this site, it would be a deal breaker all by itself.
Dana?
I have a question regarding timeline. If you did get a direct MOU with the city, what kind of timeline would this look like for to completion? Not phases, but just to completion. Have you thought that through?
Well, the one thing that I've thought through is that I need to haul my boat in 5 years, so I definitely have to get it done in 5 years. I think realistically, there'll be, unfortunately, typical of most projects that I'm involved in now, the entitlement timeline will be every bit as long or longer than the actual construction timeline. We could build, if we had entitlements and permits, we could build this building in about 10 or 12 months, start to finish. Realistically, we're probably looking at an 18-month to two-year entitlement period after we have all the everybody's input and an approval as to concept and size and a lease in place to where we could actually do the expense for the engineering and the architectural work. So realistically, breaking ground in 2 to 2.5 years and having a building in building an operable facility in 3 to 3.5 years, and full lease up hopefully well within 5 years. But again, half of that time is just spent in meetings like tonight, where we're talking to people and trying to get everybody's ideas and get a general consensus and show one set of drawings, and then find out there's a new issue that's just come up and that we have to go backtrack a little bit.
So, Terry, a couple meetings ago, you mentioned that you understand that we might opt to, you know, go out with an RFQ, and you didn't seem to have a problem with that.
I don't have a problem with that. I feel very well qualified to meet the requirements that I would expect to see in an RFQ.
Right.
I've done millions of dollars of business in Morro Bay itself. Admittedly, it's been a while, but I haven't been without ongoing activities, so I know what to do. I have a pretty good resume of projects, both public and private. I have a lot of experience, over 10 years' experience doing public projects alone. So I'm also almost convinced that maybe that's something that you should do in advance,
right,
to let you guys feel some of the pressure that I feel to try to figure out what it is you want.
Right.
Because I'm very frustrated in not really being able to move this forward. The overall original premise that I jumped feet first into was the concept that the city was announcing that it was going to spend $50,000 on a feasibility study for a project that they had a schematic drawing from RRM. And I looked at that and I said, how in the world are you going to do a feasibility study? You don't even know what you're looking at. It's a concept plan. Basically, in the last 6 or 7 months, I've tried to rethink the concept, reorganize the concept, and try, from my own perspective, to figure out the most efficient way to meet the rather convoluted program involving a museum, a boatyard, a boat storage yard, and then find a way to generate some outside money to help provide a museum space that I don't think the city wants to provide. So far, the city has granted an encroachment permit, as I understand it, and I don't quite understand how that works, but I'll take it at face value, for the slab for the future building for the Maritime Association. I have not been very productively engaged with the Maritime Association. They're very busy with their own program, and Larry Newland is very forthright in saying he spent 25 years to try to get this 400-square-foot building going, and he wants to really get it done, and I'm going to go for it. So, unfortunately, a 400-square-foot building may be a big thing for him, but it's really not the kind of project that I can get too excited about, other than I'd be happy to put on a tool bag and go down and help slam some tubifores together or something for a weekend with a bunch of the guys to help put it up. It's just not my thing. It's not what I do. I've done it, but it's not what I
right.
do.
Well, you know, I think your frustration is expressed and at least felt by me also, in the sense that I'm not saying that we've wasted 3 months. I think we've gained some information and we've gained some insight. But all I've seen from you so far is just some architectural renderings, not a financial feasibility study, not your background, a little bit of, you know, how can we move forward on something like this, and right. And so your frustration is you don't know what to provide. And so I'm not saying that, but we've gone like 3-4 months.
Right. Well, I understand.
And we're still at square one to a certain extent.
Well,
now I could be wrong, and I don't mean to say you haven't done anything.
No,
but,
and
I'm a little frustrated myself.
I can appreciate that. I will say, in my own defense, I did turn in an original pro forma way back when. I don't know if it made its way to you guys, based on a fairly naive understanding from my perspective of what was going on. But I still think, on the whole, the initial numbers that I came up with for the project that I had in mind at that time are still relatively viable. But I was never charged with the idea of developing a feasibility study. That was not what I signed on for. What I signed on for was, let me go talk to the people that I'm currently spending a bunch of money having my boat worked on, and see if they're interested in coming to Morro Bay. So I did. And they said, yes, but what do you have to offer us? And I came back to the city and I said, what do we have to offer them? They said, well, we don't know. We want to spend $50,000 on a feasibility study. Yeah. And I just approached it, well, you've got to have something more tangible than that. You've got to have a building in mind. You've got to know what it's going to cost. You've got to have a lease so that you can tell people what their lease would be and what their responsibilities are. Just the challenges of the relationship between the proposed boatyard site and the haul-out facility in and of itself. And that's something that Eric and I have spent some time on, but we haven't really discussed much with your body. As to the who and the how of getting that one little component, which is, as it turns out, probably one of the most critical components in terms of a timeline, completed, approved, engineered, completed, and operational so that it can take a travel lift that someone's going to spend $500,000 on to buy or bring up from Ventura as a second-hand unit. And just knowing that that can be done and how we're going to do that. And so it's not an easy project. If it was an easy project, there'd be a line of guys out the room ready to stand up where I am right now and sell you a project. So
right. I agree with you, Mr. This has been a good, anyways, just for us to get somewhat organized.
Yeah. Trust me, it will not bother me in the least if your decision tonight would be, let's put out an RFQ and see who's out there, because I'll be on the list. I'll submit on that list.
I think you're ahead of everybody else on that list as far as you've got so much work done already.
Well, yeah. And quite frankly, and I think I've said this before, if you want to use the work that I've done to get started, to get jump started on this thing, I'm fine with that too. I never went into this looking at as this was going to be the end all be all. I've got a 20,000 square foot multi-use building going and getting ready to go in Paso Robles right now. It's taken us 4.5 years to get.
Okay. Hold on a minute. Eric, you had something to say? Eric?
Yeah, I just want to jump in and see if I can hopefully not confuse things more. I think as you guys are going back and forth, I've been thinking about the aquarium site and how that's moved forward, because it's a very similar sort of situation. Although we didn't put this boatyard out for RFP like we did the aquarium. We put the aquarium out for RFP, had interest from the Central Coast folks, but they weren't ready to move forward on the timeline that we had put in that, so kind of asked to wait a bit, which I guess is similar to this. Which we did, and so they could put things together. So I think where I am trying to get the Harbor Advisory Board and Terry, and where we're all trying to get, is similar to the aquarium, to a point where the Harbor Advisory Board, with the help of the ad hoc committee and all its input and all the going back and forth, can make a recommendation to the City Council on a path in which to proceed. With the aquarium, that was the aquarium coming to us, having general design type parameters that they came up with. They came up with funding, how they would plan to fund it. They analyzed it from a financial standpoint in terms of basic, although we didn't negotiate lease terms, just like I haven't negotiated lease terms with Terry, there's carts and horses, and they kind of determined on what terms it was going to work for them financially. And for them, it was low to no lease rent per year, give us the site. They've since, as we spoke earlier, gone and gotten a USDA loan, very significant loan. But they brought back a basic design and a basic sort of, this is what we want to do, how we want to do it, financially this is how it works, and we brought that to the city council for decision, and city council said, great, bring it back by the end of this year, what your full funding plan is, and that was when they were first starting to talk to USDA, and so they're due to come back at the end of the year, hopefully with money in hand from USDA, and they'll be able to ready to go and have a full proposal and have a little more terms. You can't negotiate the lease before you figure out what the project is and vice versa. It's kind of a, like I say, it's sort of a cart and horse thing. So I think, and Terry, as I sent you in that email today, you know, the lease, that's just our draft title and trust lease. I don't know if that one would even apply. It's a starting point. I mean, it's the city's standard lease form.
Little red ink and some yellow highlighter, and I think we can take that.
But it's all up to negotiation.
Can we move this to the HAB, back to the HAB, and we can try to set some direction
For ourselves? One thing that I'd like to do here, thank you, Terry, is any public comment, Lexi, as a member of the ad hoc committee, do you have anything to share with us, your thoughts?
Thanks. I share, this is Lexi Bell from the Morro Bay National Usher Program. I shared my thoughts with Dana and Ron and the rest of the ad hoc committee by email. I think a little bit different. I think Eric brought up a good point. I think there's a little difference here in that there was an RFP that went out for the aquarium, and we got to determine whether there was the range of interest available, whether there was a wide variety of perspectives to be had to help create the project. In that case, there wasn't. We haven't done that in this case, and I think that's missing from the picture. And I think that's we're not, as a me as a stakeholder or you as a body, I don't think are necessarily a group of experts on some of these topics, like, you know, the construction and the site questions and the stormwater questions. And so I think that process of gathering that broader input might be helpful.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would just like to say, yeah, the ad hoc committee has been discussing this, and there's a bit of difference between the aquarium has it's a given lease site that the city has, and they put out an RFP. We're looking at a piece of property that is kind of unsure of the boundaries and who is going to be there and how much space they're going to be using with the Maritime Museum. And so we're looking at a big concept. It's been helpful to have someone come in and give us some ideas and some ways to make it more feasible by having a big building that they can lease out to make it more profitable. However, the RFQ seems to be the way to go for everybody. Mr. Simons has put some groundwork in, and maybe there'll be other people that will look at that and continue with other ideas too. But I think that will give us more information and more design ideas so that we can put together the best project. We'll start out with that, and then we can go to an RFP. At the same time, we would like to see the feasibility study happen also. It would be two different things. And the information that is being accumulated from the RFQ as applicants, if they do or do not come forward, that can be used in the feasibility study once it actually begins, because we know these things take time. You know, it's going to have to go to the city council meeting, this recommendation, and then who knows when that will be exactly, then it would be going to their staff and continuing on as far as getting contracts together and whatever. So we would like to see all of this kind of go at the same time. I think if you look at your alternatives that staff had up on the screen there, number two, talking about the financial feasibility analysis, and then number three with the RFQ, followed with the RFP, I think these could both be recommended to happen simultaneous. So that's...
Is that something that's feasible that you feel, given the fact that the city would have to initiate the feasibility study? I think one of the comments, and Lexi brought this up, and I felt that was appropriate, is that do they have the time or the energy or the expertise to do that right now when we don't really know what the project is? So rather than throw something out there that we probably won't get back, is maybe just go, I'm kind of leaning toward just the three first, put out an RFQ to see if there is any interest, and then proceed forward thereafter we get any interest from certain parties.
Yeah, I just want to jump in. So if we do a financial feasibility, and Terry made a very correct statement, we're going to have to come up with some sort of definition of what we're asking the consultant to financially analyze.
Correct.
And come up with a basic framework of what we want. Same thing with an RFQ. We're going to have to put some basic framework out there of what we're asking proposers to come in and say we want to develop. Probably can be a little less strenuous or a little less detailed than a financial feasibility analysis, but still, you've got to have a definition of what's out there that someone's going to be putting their card on the table to say they're interested in doing. So I just want to throw that in there, that we would have to define that. We've not done that to date with Terry, because Terry came to us saying, this is what I want to do, this is what I'm proposing. So I hate to keep using the cart and horse theme, but we haven't gone into great detail. You know, we've got our initial parameters that the ad hoc committee developed for the boatyard, and the basic concepts of the elements we thought we wanted to put in this boatyard. Did the RRM Can It Fit study to see if everything would fit, and apparently it does to some degree, and then move forward to this when Terry came along. So, yeah, we haven't done a robust definition of what we're looking for, because Terry came along with, okay, I'm proposing to come in and do this for you, and we've been slowly but surely trying to draw information out of him, and I can understand his frustration too, where he's needing something from us to go forward and we're needing something from him to go forward. Who needs what first and last, and to make everybody move forward? That's sort of where we seem to be at this.
Okay, I think last 3 months we've obtained some information that the ad hoc committee and yourself, Eric, can put together a RFQ to gauge interest of any other parties besides Terry Simmons to do this proposal. And I'd like to see us do that. Dana?
Well, just speaking of the definitions of a project that is missing, and this would have been something that would have needed to come about in March when we made this recommendation for the feasibility study in the first place. So, yeah, I think that's vital, obviously. And that's what we're looking for from the city all along. Is there any more discussion on the
First off, excuse me, Ron, any other public comment? Hearing none, I'm going to close public comment. Ron?
Definition's the key word, a key word. And if the RFP were crafted in such a manner to solicit from folks who survived the RFQ process, in a way that asks them to propose to the city what they think they have to have in order to make the project work, within the footprint of the space that the city is presently willing to consider but has made no commitment to, then we might get a big step down the road. I see a three-step process, and I can't, maybe it's just because I'm a linear thinker, but I can't get past it, and that's an RFQ. RFQ flows into an RFP, and when the RFP process is completed, but without the city having to make any commitments to folks necessarily, that you can trigger the financial feasibility analysis, because hopefully by that time there will be some definition. I don't think it's a good idea to spend any amount, significant amount of money on a financial feasibility analysis that doesn't have the definition necessary to make it meaningful, or a good investment of taxpayer money. So I see a three-step process. I think that this body could consider recommending to the City Council that it commit to an RFQ and an RFP process, that being a single action, and this body could consider recommending to the City Council that it pursue, that the city pursue a financial feasibility analysis at some point in time. Dana makes a good point. It takes a really long time to get things done. And one of his concerns that he has expressed to the committee is, if you do it from a time schedule, if you do it in a straight linear fashion, then the financial feasibility study may be way down the road on a temporal basis. That's a good point. But if the financial feasibility study was triggered conceptually when the RFP deadline is met, then perhaps that's the best of all worlds.
So I would like to throw out some recommendations, support discussions. Actually, I'll just make two motions separately. The first one would be to move to recommend that following the potential Morro Bay Marine Services Facility Operator RFQ and RFP process. Oh, I'm sorry. Can you scratch that? Let me start over. Move to recommend the City Council initiate a Morro Bay Marine Services Facility request for qualifications, RFQ, not later than October 1st, 2016. And should there be respondents which satisfy the RFQ, not later than December 1st, 2016, initiate a request for proposal RFP among those respondents to develop a Morro Bay Marine Services Facility. That was a motion.
Second. Okay. I have a motion by Dana, seconded by Ron. Any discussion? Joe? Lynn? Okay. Neil?
Could you read it again to me?
Okay.
I'm sorry.
The motion is to recommend to the City Council initiate a Morro Bay Marine Services Facility RFQ no later than October 1st. And should there be respondents which satisfy the RFQ, then no later than December 1st, initiate an RFP among those respondents to develop a Morro Bay Marine Services Facility.
I guess having never been involved in the RFP process myself, is that a standard timeline, essentially 2 months?
I'd say it's probably a little aggressive, but
I mean, if the goal is to get people to hear about it, is that like a?
Well, I think it's good to get it out there. It's a matter of how quickly that can be done.
Well, the RFQ by October 1st. I mean, that's just a post.
Right.
So, I mean, I think we can do that.
Can we do that, Eric?
I'm just asking.
RFQ is obviously the simpler component of the two.
That's all we're looking for right
now.
You
want it to soak out there for a while.
Right, and see if the interest level.
Then
now, the only clarification I would like to bring up is, and I pardon me, City Council, but why do we have to take this to City Council? They've already made a decision to allocate $50,000 for an RFQ, RFP. Excuse me. Let me finish. But they wanted us to talk to Terry first. We've done that. Now we're going to the RFQ, period.
No, it was to do a feasibility study to begin with.
Oh. That's not what the money was for.
Yeah.
I stand corrected.
I don't know as an advisory board that we can...
Given that the harbor department... would the harbor department be the responsible entity for an RFQ, an RFP, that as we have just, that's embedded in the motion that is on the table?
Yes, and I would work with the public works folks because they play with those all the time.
And do you think it's reasonable? You've already said you thought that the month for the RFQ I don't want to put words in your mouth, but doable, I think was the word you used.
It's aggressive.
Simultaneously, which would give 2 months, can the RFP development process be happening simultaneously so you don't have to wait and just punch that out in 30 days?
Putting together an RFP is going to take a fair amount of time and energy to develop properly and have ready to go. I would, as an administrator of my department and his time, I would hesitate to dedicate too much time to that while there's an RFQ out there soaking, not knowing what kind of responses I'm going to get. I might get 10, might get one.
Apparently you're going to get one.
Yeah. At least one.
And then the RFP would, in my humble opinion, be necessary to help shape the response.
I would respectfully recommend that you, and I understand sort of the urgency of the timeline to keep things moving effort with your dates, I would recommend you recommend to the city, not necessarily the city council authorized, but the city, because we may not have to go to council for this. This is still yet to see where I'm going to end up having to take this, but I would just leave your recommendation a little more general. We recommend the city get this thing out to RFQ no later than October 1st, 2016, and should maybe put a month and a half or 2 month, month and a half, whatever soak time you think would be appropriate, and then that the city, should there be adequate responses to justify an RFP process, move diligently forward with that as soon as possible or something like that, rather than putting these hard timelines on there.
Well, I think...
Those are the same timelines.
Yeah, but just once, maybe it's just a minor point. I think the reason that Dana directed the recommendation to the city council is because we serve the city council.
True, but we also have money in the existing budget of the Harbor Department for this study, and it's there to Eric's discretion, if he so desires. Am I correct, Eric?
Well, it's not going to be 100% my decision.
Well, I understand that.
$50,000 on a feasibility study.
As Eric stated, he might not have to go to City Council.
I have a question. The $50,000 for the feasibility study, is that from a budget that already exists that we've talked about towards the boatyard?
Yes. Yes, it's already in the capital project.
Well, I was hoping it was alternative,
no,
so that we still have...
It's in a bucket. And the reason I said city rather than city council, because like I said, depending on where we end up with this tonight and in the immediate future, we may or may not have to go to the city council, and this is going to be a discussion that I'm going to have with my higher-ups to figure out what our next steps are going to be.
So what you were just saying... October 1st for the RFQ, and then a month and a half to 2 months to soak before we did the RFP, that's pretty much December 1st, 2 months.
What? Oh, yeah, sorry. Go.
So would that work? I mean, would you like another date?
No, I don't need more dates. Should we put it on RFQ, we get three responses back of folks that are qualified and willing and able to move forward. And we get that back, let's say, mid-November. Having an RFP ready to go by December 1 is going to be a stretch. So like I said, I'm going to be hard-pressed to dedicate a ton of time and energy to an RFP as is public works director unless we have a definitive set of folks that have come and presented their qualifications. Otherwise, we've wasted a bunch of time on that. Time is precious, as you know, and
how about
I
we
wouldn't
change
want to
it?
Move forward too far on something like that, not knowing if we've got any other proposers out there.
Yeah. So if we change that from December 1st to January 1st, would that be more suitable? Or?
I mean, probably the easiest way to get around is initiate the process. If you want to leave December 1 on there, fine. Initiate the process means, let's say we're going to move forward with it. We've got three proposers, five, whatever. I start working with management and public works to start putting together that RFP package. I'm getting going on it rather than saying it's going to be out by December 1st.
Okay. Neil?
Just a quick question in line with this, and again, because I haven't been involved in, if you don't submit to the RFQ, are you ruled out of joining and submitting an RFP? Timeline-wise, I'm just trying to figure out if somebody else gets in the game late and RFPs are being submitted, but they weren't part of the RFQ process, can they?
Typically, an RFQ process, and Terry can probably speak better than I, but typically an RFQ process, if you get Company A, Company B, and Company C submitting to your RFQ, you issue the RFP to those three, and it's specific to them, so it's not out to the world. It's, hey, you've already vetted who out there in the world can do it, wants to do it. You know who they are. Then you give the proposals. Let them submit the proposals. Yes. Is that accurate, Terry?
I think,
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Yes.
The motion that I heard Dana making sounded like it was requesting an RFQ specific to the boat service yard. And from the experience that I have in studying the project now for several months, there are three basic components in the defined triangle site. One is a boat storage yard, one is a museum, and one is a boat service facility.
Correct.
If you're going to move forward with an RFQ for a boat service facility, fundamentally what I would think that Eric would do would be direct this to current and past operators of boat yards for their input as to whether they would like to enter into a lease agreement with the city for a site-specific location with parameters that they would have access to either a hoist ways and facility that either they would be responsible for building or that the city would, and that what you would be offering them would be a lease contract to operate a boatyard on city property. That's not something that I personally feel qualified to do, so I would not be responding to that RFQ. If I misheard, if what Dana's intention was to put out an RFQ for someone to be a master lessor of the entire triangle property to meet the goals stated in the RRM proposal, which is a boat storage yard, a museum facility, and a boat yard as a master lessor, manager, and developer of that, that's something that I would be qualified. And I didn't want to leave the impression that I thought someone said, well, we'll at least have one respondent to the RFQ. I would not be responding as an operator of a boatyard to an RFQ. So, and quite frankly, I think that to achieve the goals of this body, to get a marine service facility, not a boat storage yard and not a museum, I think Dana's motion is very focused, very on target, and it may be a bit aggressive from a timeline perspective, But I think that that's the quick track. And again, I've been studying the timelines and everything on this. The quick track is to find the operator who you want to come in and say, I will do a boat service facility. That's basically what I've been trying to figure out, how to go out and propose to somebody something that I don't own. I don't have a memorandum of understanding or a lease, so I really can't even legally go out and solicit prospective tenants. The city can do that. The city owns the property. The city can draw the boundaries and write the specifications for an operator to provide the marine service operation and to somehow operate a hoist or provide its hoist on the city's ways or however that would be worked out. And again, that's something that Eric and I have discussed. So,
well, you know, I think that when we issue the RFQ, and I hear what you're saying, is that, you know, you have the, you know, hopefully there's still the desire to respond to that in your proposal. Now, maybe someone else has a different idea.
Well, and again, I'm responding to the literal right. motion that I heard Dana make, where he referred to a marine service facility. Marine service facility is one corner of this three-legged stool. Okay, so you're basically talking about the development.
It's always been the whole thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then I would certainly continue. Quite frankly, I think you're going to find it very hard to find someone who's going to want to do that unless they're a developer like myself and want to be a master lessor.
Okay.
So I think you need to watch your language, how you direct your staff, to make sure that what you're really looking for is someone to make a proposal about taking over this entire property with the guidelines that you want a boatyard, a boat service facility, and some relationship with a maritime museum. The particular solution that I've come up with is just my ideas.
Okay. So, thank you, Terry.
Yeah.
Okay, Dana, would you like to amend your motion?
I would like to do that. Okay, so here we go again. I would move to recommend to the city to initiate a Morro Bay Marine Services Facility RFQ, request for qualifications, not later than October 1st, 2016. And should there be respondents which satisfy the RFQ, then no later than January 1st, 2017, initiate an RFP, request for proposal, among those respondents to develop a Morro Bay Marine Services Facility.
I hear a motion on the table. Do I hear a second? Okay, I have a motion and a seconded. Motion by Dana, a seconded by Ron, amended. Any more discussion? Hearing none, all in favor? Aye. All opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.
Okay. One thing I'd like to add, that the ad hoc would be happy to help in any definition of RFP or whatever questions you might have.
The ad hoc
always going to get a hold of us.
Thank you.
Mr. Simmons, thank you for your last comment. You can stay where you are. Thank you for your last comments. That's helpful. I originally thought in my mind it was semantics, but you're quite correct. It's substantive. The phrasing of the facility. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would also like to thank Mr. Simons for all his hard work and giving us different ideas to move forward with to make this more feasible. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry. Okay, C2, update from the Finance and Budget Ad Hoc Committee on committee's recent activities. Neil?
We have not met since the last meeting, and I do not have anything personally to update with. If anybody else from the Ad Hoc Committee has anything to add, please feel free. Otherwise, that's it.
Ron, you have anything? No. Okay, update from the Eelgrass Ad Hoc Committee on committee's recent activities.
We have not met since our last meeting, and unless Neil has some update on the bill in the Senate, Monaghan's bill.
No, but if anybody wants to speak to We have Lexi here, if she can give
Lexi,
us any updates.
Lexi, are you on the Ag Hoc Committee, Eelgrass? On our Eelgrass Ad Hoc Committee?
No. She handles
Do it you, is it appropriate to have public comment on this item, Eric?
You have to have public comment on every item.
Okay. Lexi, do you have anything to share with us or an update? Because I know that you're doing some studies with Cal Poly, I understand, and maybe there's some solutions along the way about the mitigation or maybe not.
Yeah, we're working on, we're focusing on trying to gather more information to in order to be more effective with any future restoration projects. So we just got awarded two different grants, a NOAA grant and a Department of Fish and Wildlife grant, two different components. One is to look at the previous restoration beds, determine their success, and try some pilot ideas out. And one is to look at the existing growing beds and get better monitoring information and to do some side scan sonar. Well, that was from the
Lexi, I'm sorry to be rude, but could you, I don't think folks necessarily know who you are. Could you, in this guise, could you introduce yourself?
Yes.
That would be wonderful.
Okay. I am Lexi Bell from the Morro Bay National Estuary Program. And we work to protect the bay and restore it for people and wildlife, and we have had a large focus in the past 5 years or so on eelgrass restoration, as we've seen eelgrass decline in the bay and lots of different impacts from that. So those are some two recent grants that we've received, and we're going to start working on in the next month or two. They should both start going. As you mentioned, Cal Poly researchers, there's three different research projects happening in the Bay this summer. One project focused on the genetics of eelgrass and taking samples across every single bed in the Bay to see if there's a genetic difference from the eelgrass that is doing well in the north part of the Bay versus the eelgrass that we've are not seeing do well in the south part of the bay. That's a project by Professor Jen Yost at Cal Poly. There's a project with Professor Ryan Walters, who's looking at how water quality changes as water moves through eelgrass beds to try to get a better handle on what are the water quality parameters we should be focusing on that might be having the greatest impact. So he got some specialized equipment that he deployed this summer and is now working on his data analysis. And there's another project with Jennifer O'Leary, who's a Sea Grant Extension agent and professor at Cal Poly. And she is going to look at the fish assemblages in the bay, the types of fish that are found in the areas where there used to be eelgrass beds and are no longer, because Cal Poly previously did studies to look at what fish were present when there was eelgrass. So we have a comparison factor to look at what the differences are. So those are some projects that you'll be hearing more about. Our State of the Bay report, which is our report that comes out every 3 years, where we try to share with the public everything we've learned about how the bay is doing on a variety of factors. And one of those factors is eelgrass, and a number of them are all water quality related. That report is coming out early 2017, and so we'll have eelgrass in there, and then we'll be doing a series of outreach and educational events in the spring, and we'll keep this body up to date on that, and one of those is likely to focus on eelgrass. Was that way too much information?
Thank you. No, that's great. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, thank you, Lynn. Update from the Marine Sanctuaries Ad Hoc Committee. Ron? Okay. And then now C5 is the update from the Working Waterfront Ad Hoc Committee on Committee's Recent Activities. Ron?
In the chair's absence, Chair's Jean, Let me get my thoughts together here.
It's okay. Does everyone have the 15 pages that Ron was so kind enough to assemble for us? Very, very good job, Ron.
Thank you. So in the last Harbor Advisory Board meeting, the City Council tasked the Harbor Advisory Board with working to develop a draft, quote, working waterfront, unquote, policy for the city's consideration. And the Harbor Advisory Board formed an ad hoc committee populated by Ms. Dougherty as the chair and Dana McClish and myself. And it was divided up, as it was presented by staff, it was divided up into three work elements. The first work element was to, and that's what I was searching for because I was looking at the wording out of it. Which isn't immediately coming to hand. Aha. The first of the work elements was to research working waterfronts, their designations, guidelines, and other information pertinent to Morro Bay for consideration of a Morro Bay policy and possible designation. So, it turns out that the working waterfront concept, that's capital W, capital W, is something that has received national attention for at least a decade, if not longer. And on the national level, on state levels, and on local levels. And one of the things that the committee discovered is that there doesn't appear to be a finite definition of a, quote, working waterfront, unquote. The case studies indicate that different jurisdictions, states and local entities, have defined the working waterfront in a way that met their particular needs. For instance, the state of Maine was interested in protecting its commercial fishery, I should say supporting is a better word, supporting its commercial fisheries, which always are challenged. And so they defined working waterfront from the standpoint of land use and taxation. The state of Florida took on the concept of working waterfront. And their focus was, this is my interpretation, that's not the state of Florida talking, my interpretation after reading the legislation and what led up to it was they focused on tourism because that's where their money comes from. So, for instance, in their concept of working waterfront, hotels are part of their notion of a working waterfront. So the committee has submitted to the HAB for its consideration a research report. It's an ongoing work product about working waterfronts and how Morro Bay might proceed. And maybe the thing to do to make this as efficient as possible this evening is to just share with the public and with the Harbor Advisory Board what the committee thinks that is now needed in order to move forward with its first task. Remember, the first task was to try to develop a draft concept, a working waterfront, relative to a designation. So with the public's and the Harbor Advisory Board indulgence, I'll read this. It's not very long. So this is the committee's current thinking. So the task, what was the task? The City Council work program goal for the HAB in fiscal 2016-2017 is to, quote, create a working waterfront policy for Morro Bay and pursue, quote, working waterfront, end quote, designations of guidelines, end quote. The first of three work plan elements to achieve that goal was, quote, slated to commence, end quote, in the first quarter of the current fiscal year, which is now. And that included, quote, researching working waterfront designations, guidelines, and other information pertinent to Morro Bay for consideration of a Morro Bay policy and possible designation. The key word that the committee sort of tripped across for that task is designation. We don't know what that means. So moving forward with this project, the Harbor Advisory Board needs the city councils, because that's who tasked us with this, need the city's council definition of designation in their task description as it applies to the working waterfront policy project. Defining Morro Bay's working waterfront, it's the next header. A key element of this project is defining what working waterfront means to Morro Bay. Morro Bay's waterfront extends from just south of the State Park Marina north to Toro Creek. That definition includes both a terrestrial component and a land use component. Some of the land has no improvements on it, and some of it's heavily improved. So in order to move forward, the Harbor Advisory Board needs assistance from the City Council, because that's who tasked us with this, in identifying what city lands are to be included in a working waterfront definition, as well as what land use activities within those lands are to be considered in defining Morro Bay's working waterfront. Next header, integration into existing policy development. A Morro Bay working waterfront policy needs to be integrated, this is our thinking, the committee's thinking, into the city's general plan, the local coastal plan, and the waterfront master plan. Additionally, development of a Morro Bay working waterfront policy should take place in light of waterfront-related business and land use projects that are underway or are being contemplated, and we don't know what those are, if there are any. Measure D. The city's Measure D, passed by voters in 1981 and on the books as law, states the city shall not grant any permit, authorization, or other approval of any state-owned tideland subject to city lease between Beach Street and Target Rock, which is part of potentially of Morro Bay's working waterfront. Unless such development or use is primarily for the purpose of serving or facilitating licensed commercial fishing activities or non-commercial recreational fishing activities or is clearly incidental thereto. This is still the ordinance. For purposes of illustration only and not by way of limitation, no approval should be granted for any new passenger for hire boats or supporting facilities, or for any new restaurant, cafe, gift shop, or other retail establishments serving the general public, and any existing such uses shall hereafter be considered non-conforming and shall not be expanded or enlarged. Okay, that's on the books. So Measure D needs to be integrated into the development of a Morro Bay working waterfront policy. So presuming we get through that, all of that, which was work plan element number one, work plan element two is scheduled for the second quarter of the current fiscal year, which is October, November, and December, and it states, number two states, quote, develop draft Morro Bay working waterfront policy for city council consideration. So in order to accomplish that, seems to us the committee that the HAB would require the direct involvement for all the four stated reasons of the city council, the city manager, the city's planning division, and possibly the city's planning commission. So the committee's recommendation this evening is that the City Council create a Morro Bay Working Waterfront Policy Development Task Force, which includes representation, in addition to the Harbor Advisory Board and perhaps the Ad Hoc Committee, representation from the City Council, City Administration, City's Planning Division, and possibly the City's Planning Commission. This is a real big, this is an elephant. This is an elephant. And that's okay. We're willing to take it on. But we're going to need some help chewing on the elephant.
Good point.
Thank you, Ron.
Very much so. So, Ron made a recommendation. Is that a recommendation that we need a motion on? Or is it something that you can share as part of our ad hoc committee on our goals and objectives, reporting back to City Council that this is what we'd like to do? Eric?
I don't necessarily need a motion to move forward unless you want to make a distinct recommendation.
Thank you.
And how we get to the City Council and get any feedback. I mean, we've had some direction feeding into this that we may be able to draw back out of, so we'll work with my powers that be and figure out how to move this.
Well, one of the things is you know, and again, this was brought up in the last Planning Commission meeting that you attended to, Eric, regarding Measure D. I don't know if anyone was at that meeting, is that, so, you know, they wanted to have a joint Harbor Planning Commission meeting. This might be a subject that we could really discuss, this particular aspect. Now the general plan is being done, the waterfront master plan is being done, all in conjunction. So it's definitely something that, a task force should be probably formed on this. This is an important item. So, okay. Any other questions, Ron, or comments?
And actually, I should, given that lots of folks that are listening may not know anything about this, and I failed to mention this all to the rest of the Harbor Advisory Board, although you did receive the report. But for the public's information, I mentioned that the federal government got involved in this, and if I could just indulge your patience one more time briefly, and I'll read just a paragraph out of one of our reports, out of the committee's report, because I think it provides the background. So based on feedback from nationwide working waterfront efforts, including the National Working Waterfront Network, which is a formal now organization, the NWWN, it became clear that creation of a central clearinghouse was necessary to help communities and organizations find information on the tools available to address the issues of working waterfronts. So the Federal Economic Development Administration, a division of the Department of Commerce, recognized the need to collect and synthesize information about the economic impacts and historical trends of working waterfront conversion to non-working waterfront uses, which is a big concern in coastal communities on both coasts. Traditional working waterfronts, cultural working waterfront areas being converted to non-working uses. For instance, let's just assume that we had a fish landing station somewhere on Morro Bay, and then it was decided by the city that instead of that there would be a hotel put up on those lease sites. That's the sort of conversion that has garnered a lot of attention nationwide. Additionally, it was seen that there's a benefit of providing resources related to the challenges and opportunities for preserving working waterfronts and waterways as key economic drivers in communities. In order to fulfill this objective, a subcommittee of the National Working Waterfront Network was formed to pursue a collaborative agreement with the EDA, the Economic Development Administration, federal, and they developed what's called the Sustainable Working Waterfronts Toolkit. So that is the committee has dove into the toolkit. We don't have to invent a process to achieve a definition or a designation or whatever the council chooses for more of a working waterfront out of whole cloth. There are tools available to help guide that process. There are good people who have already thought about what are the issues that need to be addressed by a given community in the process of their, quote, designating, unquote, a working waterfront. And so the committee, at least, has borrowed heavily from this Working Waterfronts toolkit and has provided the Harbor Advisory Board with an initial report that suggests how some of the elements of that toolkit can be applied to the Morro Bay process. Thanks.
Dana?
Yeah, I was just wanted to mention that some of these things may sound familiar with the sustainability of waterfront, working waterfront, and the award that was given to the city. So these are things that are ongoing, and we have local consultants that have done a lot of work in this area, and I think that's what Ron's speaking of.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, that's another deal. Anyways.
You're right.
Yeah. Lisa Weiss Associates has done a huge amount of work on this, and they were nationally recognized, or the city was, for the work that they did. So this is not, I know Henry Poncherelli is actually a member of the network, so speaking to him about this, he'd be thrilled to be involved with this.
Okay.
But he is a consultant.
All right. So thank you.
Pay city staff or you pay consultant.
Okay. Thank you very much for that update. And Eric, you'll get back to us on how we'd like to proceed. Consideration of Harbor Work Program for City Council Goals and Objectives. This goes back to complete a professional external 10-year budget forecast in January-March 2017 with new council work plan element, research and investigate new and or enhanced revenue streams. So, you know, myself and Eric met, and one of the ideas, of course, is more revenue-producing activities within the enterprise zone. And that could benefit the city and the harbor department in particular. So this might be just a free-for-all session of some of the areas that we've already explored and talked about, and we'd like your comments to see what you think. Eric?
Yeah, thanks, Bill. So I'm going to, AGP's kindly queued up PowerPoint I put together this. I'm going to, not on the screen, but verbally I'm going to shoot straight to the end and kind of show you what I'm asking for, at least what I think I'm asking for, and then we can go into the meat of it so you've kind of got that background. So, like Bill said, looking at potential new, enhanced, increased revenue sources to help out our fund, kind of what I'm hoping for on these items that I present. I got six or seven items, and again, sort of a free-for-all. Any other ideas up there, absolutely want to hear. For the items that I've thrown up, what I'm generally looking for is a pursue or not pursue, go, no go. Is this something just, no, forget it, don't even go there, or is this, yeah, this is something we're interested in. So there's a first conditioner on it. Do we want to go there or do not want to go there? If we do, provide any further detailed direction or recommendation, if any. As you'll see these items come up, I give some things to think about, lines on there, so we can have some things on our mind that may be up for consideration. If you've got a recommendation on an item that we're going to pursue, well, maybe I think about doing, you know, A instead of B. So that's kind of the back end of it. So then I'll lead off into the front end of it. So the background of this is an improved work plan element, as you said, from our City Council and Harbor Advisory Board goals and objectives. As we research new and or enhanced revenue streams, this is a subset of another subset of one of the goals. It was, as Bill said, it was fiscal sustainability and then research and investigate new and enhanced revenue streams. Our Harbor Fund this year, this fiscal year that we're currently a couple months into, is balanced to the tune of $24,000 and change. So as you know, we have a fairly large backlog of capital needs. And our capital budget comes from the excess money we have in our operating fund. And this year it's pretty thin, as the last couple of years have been fairly thin as well. But Coming up with an additional revenue is going to be pretty critical to figuring out our financial future. Harborfront revenue is just a quick recap. Leases account for about 70% of our revenues. About a $2 million budget, $1.9, $2 million budget. Slip period, mooring, boating related fees are about 16%. Grants and miscellaneous revenues are about 14%. So we're bringing this element to the Harbor Advisory Board for input and recommendation. And other happenings across the city, we're continuing to foster and development and redevelopment of our lease sites to try and increase our revenue, building capacity of those. Morbay Aquarium being one, although it's not a big direct revenue generator to the city. It'll definitely be an attraction that'll bring folks in. Libertine Pub lease site, potential redevelopment going on there with a consent to landowner with the owner to move forward. Off the hook, went out to RFP. We'll be seeing at the city council meeting on the 13th. Is that correct? Yeah, September 13th. Likely recommendation on where we're going with that lease site from the three proposals we received on that RFP. And then the city's doing other efforts, mainly the Opportunity Morro Bay program that City Manager Dave Buckingham has to try and enhance commercial development and investment in capacity in Morro Bay and increase visitation of Morro Bay, just an overall program to try and bring our city to another level. And then other untapped or new and improved revenue streams may be present, which is sort of what this element's about. It's kind of a roundtable to see what may be possible. So it's the first step, open forum, to look at these new potential revenue sources. Again, I identified half a dozen or so things here that immediately came to mind to me, and I'm just going to go through those one by one. And again, be thinking about go, no go, do you pursue, not pursue, and then any sort of recommendations you'd have as subsets of those. And then again, I got some things to consider. So first one is moving for profit activities and events on city beaches, waterfronts, and parks from a public area use permit process, which is really a no revenue process. There's a permit processing fee, and that's it, to a license agreement process. Things that come to mind, there's an organization right now, a company right now called Beach Butlers that rents our beaches through the public area use permit process, and they do weddings and corporate get-togethers and other things, and they're out there for profit. And the thing to consider about that is we have a fiduciary responsibility and obligation to the Tidelands Trust that if people are making money in our trust property, we're supposed to collect some of the revenue from it or have some sort of a revenue stream from it. And currently we don't have really a mechanism to do that. Public area use permit is really how these things have been done over the years, and up until recently hasn't been a lot of that activity going on, but as our beaches have become more popular and our parks have become more popular, there's folks that are coming in and making revenue. So again, the obligation to pursue this and look at that. Other thing to consider, establishing a fair market or defined process. I know down in Port San Luis every year they basically have a sort of a list of those types of activities that they permit, and then they put out for RFP every year to companies that want to come in, and like Beach Butlers and others that come in and produce things like that. They put it out to RFP and then review that every year. Another thing to consider is limits on the numbers or types of businesses or activities allowed. There's certain things we don't want to have on our beaches, certain things we do want to have on our beaches. Do we want to try and limit the number of them that will occur? And this includes beaches and parks and basically anywhere down in our Tidelands Trust area. Primarily the beaches and parks. So that's the first one we came up with. Second one, item B, contracting with a concessionaire, concessionaires to provide food truck or other basic beach needs, sales and rentals at the Rock. We actually had a fellow that came out early in the summer and started doing that as a program he had. Unfortunately, for reasons that I won't go into, we had to pull out. But we started him out on a public area use permit process to get him going, excuse me, knowing that we were going to transition him in probably a license agreement or some other kind of a process to collect some of his revenues. But again, he was doing concessionaire down on the beach with some easy ups, just rental and equipment and basic sales of towels and things that people needed. So those are the sorts of things that we may want to consider looking at. Things to consider, it's a city council goal this year to allow food trucks during approved events, meaning Harbor Festival, Rock to Pier Run, things like that. So existing permitted events. Currently, a food truck couldn't come in and serve any of those. So under the Morro Bay Municipal Code. So council's going to look at that later this year. Another thing to consider is competition ramifications with existing brick and mortar, both Tidelands lease tenants and other businesses in operate in Morro Bay. How big of a deal or how big of an impact or consideration or concern is that? And again, establishing a fair market or defined process. And if we did something like this, not just having opening up to the Wild West, but having a defined process so people know what they're getting into, what the limitations are and whatnot. And again, do we want to consider limitation on the numbers of type of businesses or activities that are being allowed in locations and so forth? I can go through these, I guess, one by one, then maybe we'll circle back to the beginning, and once you wrap your heads around, we'll see where we want to go with them. Third one, limited and controlled RV, no hookup RV parking spaces. We've kind of batted this around back and forth over the years. In various locations, such as the Rock, Embarcadero Dirt Extension, Front Street Parking Lot, Triangle Parking Lot, Cross from Titans Park, lot next to the hotel that used to be Embarcadero, now it's Embarcadero 595, or Launch Ramp Parking Lot. Things to consider, again, competition ramifications with existing local RV parks. Is that a factor? Is that not a factor? Is it a different market we're competing with? Establishing a defined process so that we know what we're doing and how we're doing it, limits and numbers and or sizes of RVs allowed. Would we do it as a city employee managed program or a camp host managed program? Down in Port San Luis, initially for the first year or two, the city employees managed it, the Harbor Patrol managed it, but it grew and got so popular that it justified having a camp host. Like when you go to a state park or national forest campground, they've got a camp host that's allowed to stay there and live for the duration of the season and manage the whole program. And then another thing for consideration is sort of a subset of this that I wanted to put down here. RV using fishermen, in other words, fishermen that come down to go fishing and use a launch ramp towing a boat, we get a fair amount of those, and sometimes we get cars or trucks pulling boats and people want to camp in their boats. Do we want to set up an RV based charge for that, where you're not just paying the $5 a day, but you're in RV space, so you pay an RV fee. And then another subset of that subset is in the off season, when fishing season is down, we're closed less and less, fortunately, for recreational rockfish, which is primarily mirrors when most of our activity occurs. In the off season, do we want to consider letting regular RVs down there and use those large spots? So all those things are up for consideration. Fourth one, a license agreement process for a number of, which would have percent rents or base rents, basically some sort of revenue collection for folks, for-profit operations, I call them freelance operations, operating on the bay, but not operating as an approved sublease. So folks like Six Packs and other charters, which are occurring in the bay, boat repairmen, underwater hole cleaners, all those folks that are making money within our Tidelands Trust, they're not part of a sublease necessarily of our existing lease sites. Some are, but not many. But those that aren't are out there, like say, operating freelance. And really, we have a fiduciary responsibility and obligation to the Tidelands Trust to see that they're put into some sort of a process whereby the city collects a portion of their revenues. Adding to that, insurance covers and other insurance coverages for liability, and making sure they're doing best management practices and they have all the permits they have. As they are, they're just freelancing out there and we don't know what they're doing. So putting them under a license agreement situation would bring all those things under city jurisdiction. And again, things to consider, again, the fiduciary responsibility to the trust, establishing a fair market and defined process. Do we want to limit those sorts of things, the numbers, types, activities allowed, much like the events as well. And the last two, in this first one, we've batted around here and there over the years as well. Fee-based and electrical and water service at all city slip dock and pier facilities. Things to consider there are rates of cost recovery, capital costs, the cost to provide the service, locations. From a standpoint of fee service, and what I've envisioned is sort of coin-op water service on our facilities and electrically metered electricity, at least on the coin-op stuff, robustness of equipment and resistance to vandalism. We just had, just this week, somebody go through our public shower facilities, our coin-op showers, and do a number on them and break into them all and destroy them. So we have yet to find a solid, I think we're going to have to make something custom at some point, a solid system that nobody can break into without attracting attention and whatnot. So that's something to consider there. And finally, paid parking on the Embarcadero and environs. I say on environs because, as you know, if you go down to San Luis, And you go down to Marsh and Hygera, which have pay parking, and then the parking lots around, you got to get out a few blocks to get out of the pay parking zone. So when I say environs, I say it'd be Embarcadero, and to what degree leading up the streets that could be considered. This is a management partner's recommendation in both management partner studies they've done since 2008. Another thing to consider is, you know, rates and cost recovery. There's a capital cost going into that, and then the cost to maintain it and service it. And then locations, again, and that speaks to the environs. What sorts of locations would you do? A subset or a factor into this is currently the city's engaged with RRM to look at the potential for the Embarcadero Promenade idea, which takes parking off of the west side of Embarcadero. You have yet to see what the final recommended results coming out of that are, but takes the west side parking away, comes up a couple iterations of either two-way, no parking on the Embarcadero or parking on the east side, and then it's suspect it's probably going to make recommendations on how you make up that parking elsewhere and if you go through it with a pay system or a free system. So that will play into this item as well. And again, looking for sort of a pursue, not pursue, go, no-go decision on that. And then for items to pursue, what sort of other considerations or concerns do we have? I'll take all the input tonight, take it into advisement, crunch it into the sausage-making machine, so to speak. Take it to City Council where necessary. Take it into the administrative and budgeting process where necessary. If we need more information on an item, bring it back to the Harbor Advisory Board for further information. But anticipate bringing it back to the HAB if we research it some more if those things were necessary, and see what we can move forward with and see if we can come up with any good ideas. Okay. So you want to start back on number one or letter A?
Yeah. How would we like to do this? Is there anything? First off, I'd like to maybe go down the aisle here and see if anyone has anything else to add. Any other revenue producing ideas? Neil, you're a leaseholder down there in the Embarcadero.
I'll bring it up.
Do you want to pay more rent?
I love rent.
Okay.
This might not make money, but it might save money. And I don't know, you would know what the water bill is for the city based on the slip. And I think I brought this up before, saltwater pumps down at the boat, having a saltwater use for boats instead of just freshwater. So maybe installing some saltwater pumps, that would cut down on freshwater use and the bill for the city on that.
Thank you. Ron, you have anything? Dana?
To add?
Yeah.
In the Pipeline Express Enterprise, I'd like to think of the travel upgrade. It keeps coming to my head.
Okay. Okay, I don't have anything to add. Lynn, anything? Joe, what do you think? Any fishing-related activities that could produce more money for the enterprise zone and for the fishermen? Fisher people?
No.
Okay. Eric?
I'm going to embarrass Lori and give one she came up with. Using the triangle lot, although until the boatyard is built there, as a venue for concerts, other activities. I know we've batted around. I think one of our leaseholders brought up the idea of a Ferris wheel, bringing a Ferris wheel in there. There's lots of carnival operating type folks that bring those things all over the state. So I'm using it for sort of odd jobs with concerts and whatnot.
What would be the ramifications to have a concert on the beach? I mean, would that take an act of God? I mean, to have the band right there, or would it be a liability issue and have people sit on the sand? I mean,
yeah, it's weather.
Yeah, yeah. I'm weather, just electrical logistics to get power down there.
Yeah, just more of that.
Yeah.
Lori's idea is not that far off. And this is in line with it. If the power plant would somehow allow a zip line to go across to the sand spit, I'm pretty sure we would sell out of tickets constantly.
I'm sure we would,
I'd pay
too.
For it. I know it might sound ridiculous, but if you're talking about a Ferris wheel and adventure or tourist activities,
I'd do it.
I'd pay $100 bucks. Well, I probably wouldn't do that either.
One of the things is that, you know, that they have quite a bit. You know, we do have our movie night, which is a little bit more of a fundraiser and a big kind of a drive-in experience. I think it would be logistically hard to do on a nightly basis or a weekly basis, but movies at Tidelands Park, you know, on a kind of a more of a monthly basis. A couple things that come to mind is Avila Beach Golf Resort. You know, one of the problems with golf courses nowadays, and Dairy Creek, which is in the county of San Luis Obispo, has experienced the same concept. Their revenue, because of lack of water, primarily is so diminished that there is a real good idea that they might even, you know, close. They just don't have the water. So they're thinking of all sorts of ideas of multi-use on that golf course. Concerts are the biggest, you know, one of the biggest things that they're thinking of, and they could draw quite a bit of revenue. I definitely think that, you know, if we had a venue in the Triangle lot, would not be a bad idea for an interim, at least, to have some concerts. And, you know, have a promoter do all the work. K Otter Promotions up in Cambria, Bruce Howard, he does a lot of events. And he does all the work, and we just generate the profits. So, I mean, it wouldn't be a lot of time on our part, but I think it's something to explore, you know. Okay, so let's go back to, like, number one that Eric said. Any comments on that?
So you're talking about fees basically collected for, what was it you called, the beach butlers or something?
Yeah, beach butlers, for-profit events that are occurring on city beaches.
Right. So I know there was a commercial made down at the end of the they set up all down at the end of the Embarcadero before the bridge was built there and stuff. That would be something that you could make a bunch of money on.
We kind of have filming permit fees, but again, it's sort of like public air use permit. It's a basic fee
to
cover the cost of the permit. There's no revenue generation from that.
That's too bad.
So you're looking for conceptual yay or nay?
Yeah, conceptual yay or nay.
As opposed to specifics?
Yeah. Well, conceptual yay or nay for starters, and then specifics if you've got any subcategories or information, ideas. Yeah, I like this, but...
Yeah. Ron, why don't you maybe go through the list and see what you think? And all right. Okay. Yeah. All right. Item A.
Yep.
Yay. Pursue.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. B is contracting the concessionaire or concessionaires to provide food truck and other basic beach need sales rentals at the Rock parking lot. Ron?
I would say yes, but limited to the number.
Neil?
I would say yes to the pursuit of this, but there's definitely going to need to be some follow-up discussion about it. I don't know where to stop that comment, so I'll stop.
Okay. Well, I definitely think we should pursue it. And Lynn?
I agree, but I would agree with Dana as well to watch the numbers carefully in order not to lose the ambience that we've got.
Joe?
I agree with what Lynn just said there. The one problem that we have to keep it very limited. It gets very, very crowded down there as it is, especially you go down there on a nice, you know, summer day or Indian summer that we get in the fall. It's insane down there. You can't drive around. I can see it being a problem having vendors and food trucks, and also a problem with litter and all sorts of good stuff.
Yeah, litter, garbage is a big one.
That would be part of their responsibilities and agreements, actually, provide the receptacles, provide the cleanup, you know, to give them the right to be there. Okay. Yes, Joe. All right. License agreement with base and a percent rents collected from various for-profit. I'm sorry. Oh, I apologize. limited and controlled RV, no hookups, parking in various locations. Ron?
I have a question. I don't know that there's an answer for it. Eric, do you happen to know how many spaces, if you will, that Port San Luis has for that activity? And do you happen to know how much money they might have generated out of those spaces?
I do not know the number of spaces. They have just the dirt spaces as you drive in past the Diablo entrance and on in that have no hookups or anything. And they do have a few along the backside on the right that are boatyard spaces when there's boatyard demand for it. So they've got those in the back with hookups. But I don't know the number. I'd hazard a guess to say somewhere between 30 to 40. Revenue-wise, last time I spoke to Steve McGraw while he was still there, and this is probably a couple of years old now, the revenue was something north of $200,000 a year.
Yeah.
Well,
I played golf with a gentleman, and they even gotten to the point where they'll set up your whole RV and everything at the site in Avila Beach, and he lives in San Luis. It's a new way of going on vacation.
And they've also got a camp host there that operates it and maintains it.
It's a great idea.
And my second and last question is, does the department happen to have any information as to whether the existing Morro Bay RV parks are operating at capacity or not?
I don't have any hard data. Anecdotally, I would say just driving up and down Tascadero Road enough and seeing what happens there, they're doing a good amount of business in there. That one and the one further up towards the high school. You got the two next to the high school and across the street. They're, I don't know their capacity. They're at a pretty good occupancy rate.
Well, my point is that, I mean, those are embedded businesses in Morro Bay, and I wouldn't want to harm those businesses. But if they're operating at capacity and they have for some period of time, then maybe there's an opportunity.
Has anyone had a discussion with either of those two operators, Eric?
I have not, no.
I definitely think we should talk to them before we pursue it personally.
They might even be able to help manage it.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's the other idea. Maybe that's a tremendous idea. Maybe they would like the opportunity, and we collect a percentage.
I'm a little leery of this one. When I first saw it, I just wrote no right next to it. Port San Luis, they're making money. They're not really well regarded. And as far as the Department of Boating Waterways, they don't facilitate the boaters. You can't launch a boat there very easily if it's on a trailer, if you have a rig or anything like that to put up. But they got a lot of RV parking. And I have a little bit of a problem using public lands for RV parking. I mean, but when it was explained, when Eric was doing his thing, I was thinking, okay, seasonal for some areas, maybe you can do that to make some revenue. Parking's a big problem, so I don't know why we'd want to take up all our parking with RV.
So what about the Rock? I mean, just let's say we limit it to certain areas.
Yeah, well, there you go. You're taking our town and, you know, you're using space for RVs where, I mean, we have businesses that it's hard enough to just get to that point where you can open a RV park and then you're coming in and competing with them using public space. You know, maybe it's seasonal, maybe whatever. But once you start doing it and you get used to it, the money, I don't know. Maybe I'm just a little leery. That's what I'll say.
I understand Dana's concern, because something else I hadn't really thought about also is I don't know if that puts competition on the hotels as well. It's just, you know, now that you've opened this all this space to stay. I, I un, my first, you know, when you hear $200,000, my first response is like, okay, that could solve some problems for the city. And I think, obviously, again, like my last comment, that a lot of discussion would need to follow this and thought going into it. And this kind of bleeds into the parking plan and the next few points. I mean, it all has to be cohesive. You can't just throw spots here and there and not have an idea if you're going to start charging for parking. I mean, yes, you're giving up free parking at this point for paid parking, but that's a bigger decision that we have down on F, I guess. Parking for RV, that's overnight parking or day use paid parking. I mean, I don't
know. You have to think
I don't
about
want to start talking about the other
your restrooms also.
Yeah. Pardon me?
You'd have to think about your restrooms in those areas too. They'd be getting a lot more use.
In general, I'm for pursuing that.
Okay, so it sounds Eric? Like, and I'll let you guys go across, but it sounds like potentially pursue, but a lot more issues to vet and
right.
think about and
right.
consider before it's a...
Well, I think Dana's point is well taken, and I think that we need to, do we want to commercialize this place to the extent that, you know, we're doing it to enhance revenue. We have to figure out a way to enhance revenue somehow if we're going to meet the capital needs of the harbor. I mean, it's simple as that. So it's like anything else in life. It's conservation of land. It's give and take. I mean, we've got to give and take, but we have to do it, I think, carefully, you know, personally.
So this sounds like one that would come back.
Yeah, I would like to have you talk to a couple of the RV operators to see their engage their opinions. I don't know.
Well,
they won't be here.
I personally don't want the gravity of this decision just on me when this could possibly change the landscape of Morro Bay for years to come. Just I would like some more input.
That's what you signed up for. Come on.
All right, fine. I'll make a decision.
Number D, Ron.
Forgot about two more people.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Lynn.
I do not like this idea of controlled and limited RV parking. It started out down in Port San Luis with a few spots. They were way down at the end, and slowly they have creeped closer and closer to the yard. They have taken over a number of spaces that the yard used to have for boats, and those spaces were filled with boats whenever I hauled out down there. Now, I started hauling out down there in 96. It was either 95 or 96, and I went every year or two for a number of years until I was no longer able to haul out down there. Those spaces there were always a waiting list for boats to get out, and they were unable to do so. But the RV parking, yes, brings in a lot of money. It also changes the environment. It changes the ambience. And it would very quickly, I think, displace your boatyard from the triangle lot. Also using the triangle lot for an occasional concert, you're going to get used to that kind of money and not want to do something else, which in the long run I think is of greater benefit to the city to maintain our very unique little town and our waterfront.
Thank you, Lynn. Well taken. Joe?
I guess I'll just say ditto. That was pretty much right on. I'm dead set against this one. 100%. I don't like it at all.
Okay. So we have comments on that. Number D, license agreements with base and or percent rents collected from various for-profit freelance operations, not operating as approved subleases from our lease sites being conducted on and around the bay, such as fishing and other charter six packs, boat repair businesses, underwater hull clean businesses, and the like. Definitely think we should be collecting some type of revenue from that. Ron?
Eric, do these kinds of operations required by virtue of city code to have a business license?
Yes.
And what presently happens with the business license revenue from those harbor-related activities?
Most business licenses that get processed through City Hall, depending on what address the business person lists or what activity it is, generally they get routed down to our department for approval, and if we see something that's like, that's not a sublease, we go make sure they've got a sublease. A majority of the ones I envision that fall under this category are either probably operating without a business license or operating with a different address that doesn't trigger any sort of scrutiny from us, so they're sort of under our radar.
Well, I don't know if this is practicable, but if there is a for-profit operation in the harbor or on the waterfront, as you have just stated and I anticipated, it's required to have a business license. That business license, irrespective of the registered address, would be an appropriate fee, and it should go to the Harbor Fund.
Can I clarify, too? I mean, Ron brings up an interesting point. I'm in the city of San Luis Obispo. I have two businesses in the city of San Luis Obispo. I have to pay them 1.0125% of my gross revenue. I wrote the city of San Luis Obispo a check for almost $8,000. Last month, which was July 1st. So, as Ron mentions, any activities that are within our enterprise zone that has a business license, that collect revenue, that pays money to the City Hall, do we get a percentage of that whatsoever?
Not that I'm aware of.
Well, we should.
Because it...
Cost allocation, it's called. I'm serious.
Reverse cost allocation.
From the city.
That would apply to every single business on the waterfront.
That's correct.
Well, that's
that is absolutely 100% correct.
That's
Eric.
Item G.
Okay.
You don't see it there.
No. I'm being very honest with you.
Well, no, this is the freelance of ideas.
And if you look at the 1986 state lease that we signed, all revenue collected from the leases on the waterfront needs to stay in the enterprise zone, period. It's right in there.
I'll throw that one on the wall and see how well it sticks.
But I'm being very serious.
No, I agree.
Now, it's a matter of,
you know, trading dollars from one city department to the other. I mean, the end result is we all have we have one pot, but... You know, it goes both ways with this cost allocation concept, period.
On letter D, I agree. I had the same questions as Ron. But, yeah, you could make some money there. And then also when you get to G, you'll make some money.
Okay, number E? Oh, D. Sorry. Lynn?
Yeah.
I can't. I try to get through this.
I'll make my comments very short. Yes.
Joe?
Yeah. I'm reading for profit freelance operations not operating as approved subleases from our lease sites. Would that be, being that I'm representing the commercial fishermen, a for-profit freelance operation being selling fish off of the boat, would that be including that?
No.
Okay. Yeah.
It's on and around the bay.
Neil?
Yeah. Pursue.
Danny, you have anything else to add?
No.
And Ron, you're okay. E is fee-based electrical and water service at all city slip, dock, and pier facilities, as Eric mentioned. We've looked into this. Is it something that we really want to pursue? I don't think so.
Ron?
Yeah, we've been down this road. If just take it straight on. If you want more money out of it, increase the rates.
Exactly.
I'm going to say no on E. I agree that you could just up the slip fees if it's that bad.
I agree with that statement as well.
Yeah, I do too. Lynn?
Yeah, I would just question the amount of investment you would have to put in order to achieve what kind of revenue.
I'll say no to this one. As a question, though, just for kicking it around, how would you monitor it for, say, if you sublease your slip out for a week or something, or 2 weeks, and you come back, and I mean, is there a pay meter? How would you determine what was used by who?
Electrical wise, the technology is such now that you've got readers for equipment that's in the electrical box, and you can determine really almost from a day-to-day use. You can download the data out of this thing. It's not a meter that spins and you go look at a number. You can bring a reader by the box and it can tell you from, you know, today and for the next 3 days what the reading was. So you can parse that out. Water, for a water situation, my vision on that, or my take on that, would be a coin op or a token operated. So it wouldn't matter. You'd have to stick a quarter in to make it go. Because technology, I don't think, exists for the water side.
Thank you, Eric.
So pay parking. Joe? What do you think of paid parking in Embarcadero and the surrounding areas?
I think no. I mean, that's a tough one. Once again, coming from the fishing side of things here, I mean, if I come down and drive my truck down and I'm going fishing for 5 days, how do I pay for that?
Yeah, you have a permit.
Yeah. Slip holders, or you have a permit. Or moorings.
Yeah, but Santa Barbara's different. You're parking in a giant parking lot. You're not parking on the street. I got to pay 25 or however much the permit is to park on a public street that I'm already paying taxes for to keep in shape.
Well,
I don't know.
I pay the airport for a parking permit that allows, I mean, that is by definition public land. It's paid parking, and I pay for permit so I can park there whenever I want to. I'm not sure I see the difference. In this particular case, the money that I pay to the airport, I'm paying for my slip, so I get my parking pass, and I don't. You know, we haven't even gotten to the enforcement issue. Okay, I mean, that's a whole another thing about paid parking, but setting that aside. And there are cities all over the country where you park on a public street in your neighborhood and you get a parking pass on your car that allows you to do that.
So you get a permit with being a slip holder. Is that what I get that you're getting out with that? Okay, so then I throw it into, you get a permit for being a slip holder. What if you're a crew? So I have to pay to go to work for somebody who's getting, and that the reason I bring that up is because with the way that crew works, you know, I mean, I fancy myself to be a pretty nice guy for the most part. A couple years ago, crab, and I went through like, I think, 9 guys in one season. So obviously, I can't keep getting permits to have a guy come to park to go to work.
I think we'd have to designate, you know, certain areas as parking and non-parking. I mean, I know it's a quagmire, but I'm more envisioning, and I don't know how to differentiate, is paid parking for the visitors, period. I mean, not for people that live here. I mean, they need to pay more money to come here to visit Morro Bay. Seriously.
I love that idea, but I don't think that it's very practical. You can't really implement it.
Well, I'll tell you, that's my opinion, okay? I mean, and I'm going to stick to it. We have enough visitors, period.
Can I? So all this is good information and good concerns. I don't think we're agreeing to any, you know, if we say yes to pay parking, I don't think we're agreeing to, yeah, we'll do a permit system. No, we don't. I think it's all things to take under consideration and throw in the mix. One thing I'll say to the crew aspect of it, parking on the Embarcadero is limited, more limited in some places than the other. There are a fair amount of instances along our waterfront of employees parking right in front of their main businesses and taking up the prime spots, which affects their business directly. I don't think the employees necessarily understand that all the time. You can go down there every given day on the opening up of the shops at 9 or 10 in the morning, and there's a lot of parking already taken up by employees that have taken up the prime spot. For your fishing example, Joe, I think if you initiated some sort of permit system, much like the businesses, it's going to force you to basically carpool down to the boat when you go for a trip. You're going to leave your deckhand's car at his house, you're going to pick him up, and you're going to leave your one car in front of your slip. It's going to do something like that. I mean, that's one way to get around that, so that if you got three crewmen, you know, some of these boats have a couple more than one crewman. They all drive down in the morning, and you've got five cars for one boat that's taken up. You're taking up a lot of good real estate for a long time, so encouraging an alternative way, carpooling, to get around that, I think, can be a healthy thing in the long run. It's maybe a little more pain in the butt, but so is carpooling and having to stop and pick people up, but it encourages
earlier this year, Public Works speculated, and I was used the word speculated because that's what the word they used. Public Works speculated that 30% of the parking spaces in the core business area of the Embarcadero are routinely taken up by business and by employees of businesses down there.
I would agree.
Okay. Any other comments on paid parking?
I'm interested in pursuing this. I think that just at least continuing the conversation about it and see where it goes. If this is where I was getting at, that if the city's looking at doing a promenade, they're going to get rid of a whole bunch of prime parking spots anyway. And this is where it'd have to be a cohesive plan from Tideland Park to the Rock to determine where paid parking is going to go. And, you know, and I think that all people, whether they're residents or visitors, should be treated equally. I think the parking spots can be deemed, you know, either prime or subprime, to where, you know, employee parking could, you know, essentially maybe people have to walk two blocks now as opposed to walking on the waterfront. I don't know what impacts that'll have on surrounding neighborhoods and what backlash would come from that, but, you know, if there is other options, we don't have to have the entire Embarcadero be paid parking, but it could be selective to prime locations, but more conversation.
And again, on that promenade process, which is going to evaluate some degree of this as well, my intent would be to take this information that you guys have provided, this kind of input, concerns, ideas, whatever you want to call it, and ensure that it, you know, if you guys are all like, yes, 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 let's do it, I don't think I'd necessarily go and start trying to implement it tomorrow. I think I'd make sure I feed that into that RM promenade connection from Main Street, our Morro Bay Boulevard process down Centennial Stairway. That's a bigger process, but make sure that we feed into that and have our input into that, because that is going to look at parking issues.
Isn't this about this particular agenda item is addressing opportunities for Harbor Department revenue derived from the trust lands?
Yes.
Okay, and aren't the trust lands limited to the west side of Embarcadero?
Yes, they are.
Okay, so when we think about this, we're not thinking about the waterfront necessarily.
Correct.
We're thinking about whatever the parking spaces are that are within the enterprise.
Well, I think unless
the city, in its largesse, would like to make a significant area of the central business area around the Embarcadero paid parking, which I personally think is an excellent idea and as a revenue maker, and then give a slice to the harbor department.
So I think, given your statement, Ron, that, yeah, the Tidelands Trust ends in the center line and goes west, you could make the literal argument that, okay, if we put this promenade in that takes away all that parking on the west side, we don't have a dog in this fight anymore. Well, we still do. I think your purview is, yeah, it's technically the Tidelands Trust, but it's the Harbor Advisory Board and the harbor environment. And I think the input applies not just to the center line and west. It really applies to the whole waterfront and how it operates. So I think your input should feed into that.
I hope that's true. The input's one thing. I mean, that's easy. That's just us expressing an opinion. Where the rubber meets the road is if there is paid parking and it isn't to the west of Embarcadero, would any of that money flow back to the harbor fund?
You can rest assured, and I've already had this conversation with a couple of people, that if the promenade happens and we do paid parking along the Embarcadero and I lose all my opportunity for revenue generation directly, we still deserve a piece of the pie across the street, because where do you think everybody's going? So, yeah, we've had that conversation, but that's a good factor and a good point.
Okay.
Okay.
So, hearing no other comments, thank you very much. Let's move on to our last item, which is, again, another goal and objective. Not exactly sure, which is,
AGP.
What is it? C7, consideration of harbor work program for city council goals and objectives, improve city operations, harbor maintenance, evaluate transferring harbor maintenance functions to public works, work plan element 1, identify functions contemplated for transfer using the harbor department level of service document developed. I have a recommendation. Is that it's a ludicrous idea. Simple as that. And I've made this known to city council, but I actually requested Eric to bring this up, because as the city operates, and as Ron so tells me, that we operate under the city council's preview, and this is something that they want to look at. And so I think we just at least need to look at it and report back to them on what our findings are. So, Eric, maybe lead us through this.
Sure, absolutely. So I'm going to look at the end and see if I want to go backwards first. Nah, we'll go forwards. So, again, work plan element from Harbor Advisory Board and City Council goals and objectives. It's a management partner's recommendation. Consider transferring harbor maintenance functions over to Public Works, which is where currently the facilities folks are that do all the city facility parks and other maintenance. They used to be over in recreation and parks, but they've since moved. The way I put this work plan element together was consider starting with the Harbor Department level of service document, which is a document we created back in 2010 when Rick Algott retired and we didn't refill the position, and we had all his duties to try and figure out how to shuffle the puzzle pieces and still function and operate and do all the things that we're supposed to do. So Sue Lichtenbaum and I put together this document to kind of take a snapshot of all the things that we do operationally and administratively, and sort of show who's responsible for them. And then we'd take all those responsibility boxes and shuffle them around when we reconstituted our department back in 2010, 2011. So that's where that document came from. I got the format or the template from the fire department, who have those on a pretty regular basis. So that's what we're starting with. And that's the history of where that document came from. So what I'm looking for is Harbor Advisory Board input and recommendation on applicable level of service document items. I did list them all, the applicable ones, in the staff report. I didn't put it up on the PowerPoint here. I would have been here all night creating this. So just kind of want to go through these. If we get through them all, great. If not, if you want to handle them all in one big fell swoop, one way or another, that's fine. But we're looking for input on the items and then other things to consider beyond just, yeah, move this function over, don't move this function over. Decision or recommendation is one thing, but other things to consider are chain of command, who's ultimately responsible for and decision-making responsibility on these items if we do move something over. Or is the department, Harbor Department, completely divorced from maintenance and we just pay for it? Or are we somewhere in between? Is one item to consider. Another item to consider is if the quantity of work justifies it, should there be a dedicated harbor maintenance person over in Public Works? And if not, should there be a sole point of contact or somebody who's primarily in charge of harbor maintenance, or does it just disappear into Public Works and it gets done how they see fit? Item C, which department should be responsible for capital projects, budgeting, planning, and execution? I think in my staff report, and I'm recommending and would see or feel that the Harbor Department should still be the major component of that. While I do use Public Works in bid document processing and approvals and engineering, I still think that I recommend that we would still be the primary person, the primary department to do capital projects, planning, execution. And then one of the things we brought up, I think it came up in the joint HAB council meeting when we were discussing this item, was performance parameters. In other words, if this does move over, what's the performance parameters we're going to use? What are our metrics for success? Do we have increases or decreases in efficiency, and how do we know that? Do we have increases and decreases or decreases in customer satisfaction, and how do we determine that? Well, that's a little easier than efficiency to determine. Just look at your complaint box. And another item to consider is financials in determining a cost allocation. I assume this would be some sort of a cost allocation process. Do we do that internal? Department-wise, us talking to finance, talking to Public Works, and come up with a scheme, or to do an external consultant-based cost allocation from a firm that does this for a living. Does the Harbor Department, if we move the maintenance over, does the Harbor Department then charge back for the time that we have to take to, I'm assuming there's going to be some training in this, to, if we do it, to get Public Works folks up to speed, is because, as you know, waterfront maintenance can be pretty particular and specialized, and not something that everybody knows how to do, and just local knowledge, and would we want to charge back for our time taken to go do that? And then another item I just put in here, I did the PowerPoint, but I didn't put it in the staff report, is what I call power by the hour. Which is a throwback to my airline days. Most airlines rent engines by the hour, and you mark down how many hours you run the engine, and you pay for those hours. Would we want to do the maintenance on that sort of a basis? In other words, if a Public Works guy comes down and puts down 1.5 hours, he logs out, and we've got the timesheet tracking software to do that now, to sub it out. Planning is currently does that. They, all the house and commercial projects they have, when somebody fills out their timesheet, they've logged that they've, you know, spent 6 hours on 220 Zanzibar, and so they'll have a drop down, and they'll have that able to do that in their timesheet. So would we want to do something like that and do it on that basis rather than a cost allocation basis? So those are the things to consider. And again, I'm looking for your discussion input on what functions potentially could be transferred, in addition to input on the other issues as outlined. If we move forward with this, my next sort of work element would be working with Public Works staff to develop potential models, and then bring those models back to the Harbor Advisory Board for review and recommendation, and that analysis would eventually go to the City Council. I will say that currently our department does maintenance in probably two ways. I'll not put capital on it, because capital generally goes out to bid or out to contract. In-house, with our Harbor Patrol staff, or contract out either on a contract medium-sized project basis, but not a Public Works size project where you're going out to bid, or just contracting with somebody directly, with an electrician or a plumber or a dock repair guy and doing dock repairs. Vehicles, I don't think, are really up for consideration here. Our vehicle maintenance, that already goes to the city vehicle guy. And what he can't do and what he doesn't do, he sends off to Jim's Auto or Perry's or somewhere else. And our boats are the same way. We do our basic boat maintenance, and then everything else we bring to the professional boat guys. So we're not contemplating really moving our boat and vehicle maintenance over to Public Works. It's already adequately handled. But having our patrol guys work on maintenance projects, while there's a certain efficiency and a down hominess to that, it is a demand on their time. Time that could be spent training and doing other things. And there may be some elements of efficiency to have dedicated maintenance folks working on this stuff. Another model may, or a recommendation could be, an in-house harbor department maintenance person rather than farming it out to Public Works. So all things up to consider. I just want to throw that in there that, I'm not necessarily dead set against maintenance moving out of my department. I've got no foregone conclusion one way or another. I do see a value in pulling that off of our patrol folks to a degree, just because it can get cumbersome and it can encompass a lot of their time, although some projects they like doing, they take a lot of pride in it. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. So with that.
Well, I think that I'm not so sure that I'm prepared, at least, to make a recommendation. I'd like to ask some questions to you and maybe, throw this around. It goes to the same task of, we are paying for the maintenance of the restrooms. I go back to the restrooms in the tune of $92,000. But we have no control. We have no say. We just pay the money to Public Works on our cost allocation. So, again, I go back to the same premise, is I don't necessarily think that transferring any duties that we currently do throughout either the existing staff or contracting out should be given to Public Works. If we need the manpower, and it's better served maybe to hire two part-time maintenance people, I believe you have one right now, Roger, is that correct?
Correct.
Uh-huh. And because we're going to have to pay for it anyway, if the Public Works has to do the work, they're going to charge you. So I feel it's best to have it, and I brought up the same discussion. This is maybe the time to discuss, as much as I hate to have us take over the restroom facilities, maybe we could do a better job. I don't know. I mean, that's another discussion that could go all night. And it's, again, it's just a discussion that never ends. So I'm not in favor of this at all, even looking at it. I think that we can be best served by utilizing maybe another maintenance person, if so be it, and encompassing it within our own department. It's kind of like the police department. Why even look at it right now? It's not broken. It's my opinion.
Ron?
I have a couple of questions. Eric, is the current level of service document dated April 19th, 2010, essentially inclusive?
Yeah, it's essentially inclusive. I would say some of the boxes have been reshuffled around. I tried to, in each box, put a discrete responsibility or task. And then under what position that fell, and sort of a performance parameter that we thought we want to meet, should meet, do meet. So those all items are still there. Exactly who it falls under,
no, I don't care about
at this
that
time part. May change.
Yeah, I don't care about that part.
We've revamped ourselves since then.
But whether basically all of the functional items are listed.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm sure there's a couple that slipped through the cracks, but yeah, I think I got them all.
Okay, so out of that list, and I see that in the staff report, there's a number of items that have been taken out of that list. Are there any items in the current level of service document that the harbor director feels would be better under Public Works, and if so, why?
I have not analyzed that to item by item to say, yeah, it'd be good there, yeah, it'd be not be good there. I'm going to back up a little bit on Bill's comments. So city council direction was to look at this and consider moving these things over. There may not be agreement to move them over, and that can be part of the recommendation. But I still think we need to get past that and look at, okay, if we're going to move things over, what are we going to move over, and how are we going to measure these five different things, which is what the city council asked for. Again, it can be, you're not recommending doing that, but if you did, here's what you would recommend in terms of the items and look at them on their on an individual basis. I have not looked at them individually to see what would work better one way or another, or go make sense to move over to Public Works or not.
Okay, thank you. So I have some questions about the five items. As it relates to A, and there may or may not be answers this evening for these, as it relates to A, which is the chain of command structure, I see a description, but what would the mechanism be? Because without a mechanism, I can't render an opinion. Do you have something in mind?
I think the chain of command, if functions were moved, if function A, B, and C were moved over to Public Works, and it was the desire of the city that the chain of command flows such that the Harbor Department is responsible for the ultimate sort of final product and the timeline on which it gets done, then either job descriptions would need to be reworked such that Public Works maintenance worker two would have reporting responsibility to the Harbor Department and not his Public Works director.
Wow.
For certain items.
Doesn't that strike you as being fraught with difficulty?
Convoluted, perhaps?
I think you're being very, very kind.
These are all the things that I think the city needs to consider if we're going to do this. How would you do this? I think that's exactly why we're doing this exercise, is to look at these issues, pitfalls, everything else.
Okay, well, I don't have an answer for A. Jumping to C, I have a suggestion, and that is that an additional bullet item would be the quality of the work. Which would be inserted before, how do we measure those things? Because that's an outstanding question. How would we measure that? And so far as E is concerned, presuming something like this happens, I would be a strong advocate for keeping it internal. Who knows more about how much it's going to cost to do something than the people, than the employees of the city who are tasked with doing it, managing and doing it?
Eric, question. You made a comment, and I think a valid comment, that maybe some of the maintenance duties that the existing Harbor Patrol officers and the reserve officers are doing right now are mundane, and maybe they could be doing other things. Have they expressed that desire? Is it in part of their job description to do certain maintenance things? You know, when they get hired as a Harbor Patrol officer, I mean, I'm just curious for that. Have you pulled the five existing from Becca down to the four on what their opinion is of this? I'm just kind of curious about that.
Yes, it's in their job descriptions to do that. Have we? I've not pulled them or seen yay or nay if they have an opinion one way or another. I don't think that is really a factor that while it's important, what they think and what they feel, if we as a city determine that we want to manage this differently, I think whether they feel strongly one way or another, I'm not sure how much that plays into it, should play into it.
Okay.
Whether they love it or hate it.
Morale
is not important.
No, morale is important.
Okay.
So I'm just curious.
But I don't want to. This is I think that can be factored in to decision making, but I don't think it's. I'm sure the right word or right term is. This is a city a functional organization process, not what your employees do or don't want to do process.
The one thing I hate to see, I've spent a lot of time in the harbor office lately, because I'm involved, and not that I don't feel that maybe some functions, but it's an integral, it's the hub of the harbor. People come in there for all sorts of questions, and to say, well, this is not my jurisdiction, or this is not my, you got to go to City Hall. I just hate to see that happen. It's like, we change the whole culture. And that is the hub of the culture of the harbor. As we talk about a working waterfront, we talk about this. I just don't feel that it's something that we want to play around with.
And I think that point about, and I had the very same thought last week when I was working these things up, is with the chain of command idea of what I wouldn't want either is somebody coming in my office, Jeremiah O'Brien coming in my office, hey, how's that cleat coming? I don't know. Let's go talk to those guys. Yeah, that's where the chain of command comes in. And so to address that, our department stays in that chain of command somehow in the responsibility and the knowing with the status of the thing so that we do know. And while we may not be there swinging the hammer or tightening the bolt, we would be part of the chain of command process to we would be responsible and responsive. That's a way to address that.
Neil?
I agree with Bill's point, but more so than just culturally, you guys have your finger on the pulse of everything that's going on. You walk over or drive by every cleat, as you were talking about, daily. And I understand that with all these points, there might not be the need for your specifically trained enforcement agents that could be out doing either training or rescues or patrols. Don't necessarily need to turn every screw or light bulb or anything, but I would hate to see the control leave the Harbor Department, and I would rather see the Harbor Department possibly take on an additional employee or whatever however many that number is, you guys would know, and maybe the reverse, take the responsibility on yourself and then service this list on the harbor.
Joe, do you have anything? Well, no, I didn't bypass you.
You didn't?
No, I just basically went over you for 1 second, and I'm coming back. Lynn, I apologize. Lynn? Okay, Joe?
I would have to agree that I would rather see an extra employee or an extra two employees go to the Harbor Department. I don't know if any of you have ever taken a boat into San Francisco before. San Francisco, all their dock maintenance, everything like that is all run by the city, and it is freaking horrible. I mean, horrible. I literally, 3 years ago, watched boats breaking off of docks breaking off of pilings, dock and boat breaking off and swinging around, hitting other boats, all sorts of good stuff. It's just, I do not see it being a good idea. I would be way more comfortable with having you guys have the extra employees, and then in the event, they could be maintenance people and also be cross-trained to help you guys in situation of emergency. We've been having a really calm, it seems like a really calm decade, kind of seems like. But I remember when I was younger, this is a very, very dangerous harbor. be nice to be able to have you guys have that backup if you needed it. And in the meantime, they're doing maintenance.
So one thing just struck me as we're talking about employees and extra people and this and that is back to my last item where we've got $24,427 in excess this year. That's not an employee. Currently, we do it. We do what we're doing with existing employees and a certain level of contracting out. It strikes me now that, and I'll use my cart and horse analogy again because it's, I guess it's working. We may have a cart in front of the horse in that if we have Public Works start doing this stuff, it's going to cost more. Through a cost allocation, power by the hour, whatever. It's going to cost our department more. We're still going to pay the patrol staff and Roger what we're paying them now. They may shift their duties and do other things, but we're still, I don't think, at least I hope nobody's thinking of reducing the patrol staff because we've still got a huge amount of duties and responsibilities for patrol just as it is. Maintenance kind of squeezes in where we can squeeze maintenance in. So I see if we went over Public Works, it's going to be an additional cost. One of the whole caveats or tenets of the maintenance partners project was not just efficiencies in operations, but savings financially, and that would not be a financial saving. Now you factor in the contract aspect of how much do we contract out, and you wouldn't be contracting that anymore. So I think we need to, I personally think at this point, it may be prudent to continue on here and get to an endpoint, but bring this item back, look at the financial ramifications of this from, at least from the contracting standpoint, how much money do we spend on contracting, then we won't spend that, and then figure out what this might potentially financially look like, because if it's financial negative, we barely got our head above water right now. We're alive and swimming, but adding another employee or a big cost allocation hit is going to put us very quickly right back in the red.
No, so, and you know, I think you're right. I mean, and then the other aspect is that the contract things that you contract out for, do they have the expertise at Public Works to do it, or would they have to contract out for it? And if they would have to contract out for it, it's
just
a moot point.
Extra level.
Yeah. It's a moot point. So I think that we should probably do a little bit more analysis on the financial side of it, and you can bring that back to us, and we can circle around this item again. This was something that I brought to your attention that I wanted to bring up tonight. I do apologize, board members, because this is something that the city council wanted to do, and I think that we need to try to delve into it, and that's what we're doing tonight. So I would like to see a little bit more financial aspect of it at our next meeting, and then maybe we can bring this up again.
Yeah, I'm totally fine with that.
Okay. Is there any other discussion? Ron?
As I read the management partners report, which is the genesis for this, on this particular item, I do not see the management partners has taken into account a basic and fundamental business principle, and that is that responsibility begets control, and control demands responsibility. I would like to see as many harbor-related functions as the Harbor Department and its director feel are appropriate for the Harbor Department to control, to have the responsibility for as well, which flows from budget and manpower and all the rest of it. If you control it, if you need to control it, it needs to be yours.
Ditto. Dana?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't see that we need to discuss this too much more. I think all the points have been made that the most efficient way to do it is the way that it's been done for quite a while, trying to balance a budget and everything else with the people that are the most familiar with it, those responsibilities, and that seems to be working the best. So, I mean, this is good that, you know, we're looking at this, and it's been brought up to maybe console the rest of the city, but I think it's pretty obvious.
Neil?
I think we've covered it enough. I agree with Ron.
Lynn?
When I looked at this, I looked at about 21 items that are listed that were up for consideration against the 210 items that are listed at the current level of service, which happens to be 10%, unless I've counted wrong. And that seems to be such a small number that unless some of those things were extraordinary in the amount of time or skill that they needed, that it doesn't seem worthwhile talking about. That may be a very simplistic attitude, but that's what I see.
Joe?
I agree. I don't think that there even needs to be a discussion here. I don't think it's a very good idea.
I agree. Okay. So thank you, Eric. And this actually is our last agenda item tonight. Number D is the declaration of future agenda items that we don't already have currently on our future agenda items. Does anyone have anything to add to that? Joe? Lynn? Neil? I mean, the existing ones we'll go over if they're pertinent. Dana?
No, I think we have some.
And Ron? Yeah. Okay. So, do I hear a motion to adjourn?
No
move. I have a motion to adjourn. Do I have a second? Okay. Lynn made a motion to adjourn. Joe made a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Adjourn.
I didn't mean to have any disrespect,
I'm
Lynn.
Sure you did.
No, I'm serious. You know, as you can well tell up here, I'm a little loopy half the time. So I'm not. I just kind of ramble. I do apologize.